Our March 15th meeting will come to order, please. And the legislative assistant will note the roll. Representative Tilbury, would you approve the minutes, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll do that, and so moved.
Thank you, Representative Tilbury, who was here early today, and we're so delighted to have him with us on time and before we actually begin our business. We'll move the minutes. Are there any corrections or additions? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. And the minutes from March 13th are adopted, and that was moved again by Representative Tilbury. Members, today is a celebration in the Great Hall of the Capitol. From 9 to 4, celebration of innovation and learning. Join Microsoft leaders, students, and educators as we explore next-generation learning and learn about Microsoft education and workforce development programs through a demonstration that will be going on the Xbox Connect used in Minnesota classrooms from 9 to 4 today. So please do take some time to stop to enjoy that excellent demonstration. We're so glad to have them here. Members, our meeting today will resume tonight after session, no doubt with the policy bill from the Department of Education. So we hope to work through the other bills on our agenda. The first one on our agenda today is the Holberg bill, which I'm going to take from having Lain it over to be before you. It's House File 2329. It is the CPR provision. And as you know, I did lay it over to be included in a possible omnibus bill, but because we have no omnibus bill, I would like to move it. And in discussion with my caucus, they have recommended that we move it without recommendation. So that will be the motion that I will make, that we move 2329 to the general register without recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been receiving a number of emails concerning this legislation. And one of the issues, which I'd like to get some advice on, has to do with the question that if children or young people are taught CPR in one of these short programs, a half an hour or so, and then they intervene in an incident, are there legal ramifications? Since we're such a litigious society, I could see the possibility of some legal difficulties arising, and I'd just like to have a discussion of that. I think that's really a critical issue.
Mr. Bell, will you please come to the testifying table? Please say your name for the record and be ready to answer Representative Benson's question.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Justin Bell. I'm the Government Relations Director for the American Heart Association in Minnesota.
Representative Benson, would you ask your question?
Yes, well, my question concerned a number of emails I received from constituents who are concerned that a program of teaching young people in school, or even employees of a district or the general public, could face litigation. For example, if you know what they do creates a problem, or they were not successful in reviving someone. We do live in a very litigious society where people sue if you drop a handkerchief on the ground practically now. So yeah, I do think this is a legitimate question, and I'd like to have it explored.
Mr. Bell.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, we've taught this the hands-only course for a number of years, both the American Heart Association, the American Red Cross, the American Safety Council. And in Minnesota, the Good Samaritan Law in Minnesota protects someone who's intervening with the intention of helping someone in a cardiac emergency and covers CPR and AED usage.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, are you suggesting there have never been any legal suits in this area at all?
Mr. Bell.
Or do you know if there have been?
I don't know if there have been. There's none to my knowledge, no.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I really think that's a critical issue. I don't know if there's anyone in law enforcement or in the Department of Education or where might have that question answered, because hardly anything happens today without someone being sued for something. And, you know, particularly if the process of training someone in CPR is fairly limited, as I think this legislation is proposing, it seems to me that it would be very possible that someone could suggest, I didn't ask for this CPR, and you did this, and it caused harm, and all the rest. So I guess that, Madam Chair, is the biggest concern I have about this legislation. And
I'd like the School Boards Association to come forward. And Mr. Schneiderwind, if you could answer this question. If something is offered voluntarily in a school district versus mandated, is there a difference in the possible consequences, as Representative Benson has alluded to? Please say your name for the record and answer our questions.
Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneiderwind, on staff of the School Boards Association. And I don't have a good answer for you this morning. What I do think, and this does raise an issue for us, and I think maybe the legislation needs to be clearer that this is an orientation piece. This does not certify them to perform CPR, and I think that's one of the issues that perhaps could be clarified within here, that there is no, I mean, this doesn't train them to perform. I think it's an the way I understand it, it's an introduction to the system, orientation process, and so on the legal side, I'm just not clear. I would have to get back to the committee or get back to you as soon as I could.
Thank you, Mr. Schneiderwind. Representative Keel, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I was going to ask about they're not you know, they don't get the qualification certification that, and but Mr. Schneiderwind answered that. So
okay, Mr. Bell, any comment?
No, Madam Chair.
We are awaiting the first engrossment, in case you wanted to see the difference between that and the original introduction. Are there any other questions? Do you think, Carmen, we can move the first engrossment without their senior? Members, do you have any issue if we move this without recommendation, the first engrossment, which we don't have in front of us, without your seeing it? Ms. Larson went to get it, but as long as we're moving this without recommendation, I don't think you have to feel compelled to take responsibility for this. It's a way I can move it out of the committee without all of us feeling that we're sending a mandate on. Representative Benson, you look like you had a concern.
Well, I do, Madam Chair. It just seems that, you know, when I think about my career in education, and we have these programs to introduce children, and pretty soon the notion becomes, well, now you can go out and do this, and if you have your friend on the playing field, you can, you know, practice it now. And I'm just worried that in many districts, I'm sure it would be clearly delineated that this is simply an introductory exercise, but throughout the 300 and some school districts, I'm not sure when we get to individual schools. You know, just think of the personal feeling of guilt a young person might have if, with all good intentions, he or she intervened in an incident and maybe even interfered in what was needed for, you know, an effective rescue operation. I just think somewhere along the line, if not here in this committee, but this is the policy committee, and it seems like we ought to clarify that language before things are moved on. I just, I support the notion that we ought to introduce young people to this this skill, but this legislation, I think, is a little bit loose, and I'm concerned and feel uncomfortable supporting it right now.
Mr. Bell.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, we're happy to continue working on the language to reference the Good Samaritan Law or be more clear as to exactly how we address that issue.
So, Representative Benson, am I hearing you suggest that we not even deal with this right now, that we lay it over. It has moved in the Senate. We could lay it over either permanently or indefinitely.
Well, could we, you know, if we could, Madam Chair, thank you for asking me. I would feel more comfortable we could at least lay it over a little while so that the author of the bill could meet with the representative here or the spokesman here and get that language clarified a little bit. In spite of the great wisdom, I'm sure the Senate usually deals with all these issues. I just feel, you know, a personal responsibility here with the experience I've had in
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I was going to just literally pick up where Representative Benson left off on this. Maybe since we are at the beginning of the business day today and this committee is going to reconvene tonight at 6 o'clock, that perhaps Mr. Bell take this day and consult with legal counsel on his side, and maybe we can have an answer back to the committee this evening. I'm sure that this is not unique. They've been working on this in other states across the union, and perhaps he can bring us some more enlightening information we can deal with it this evening, and that may give members more comfort.
And Representative Murdoch and Representative Greiling and Representative Mariani, you're all co-authors. It would be good for us to have the chief author, Representative Holberg, here. So I'll lay this over until this evening. Thank you, members. Our next bill this morning is House File 2801, Representative Woodard's Charter School Bill, and Representative Myra will come to the chair, please. Representative Woodard, would you please move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File number 2801 be passed and sent to the General Register.
Thank you. Go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 2801 attempts to address an issue that was brought to me recently by the High School for the Recording Arts, in which they have a significant number of their students who are ALC eligible or eligible for the graduation incentives program. And they have a concern about the way their graduation rates are reported as a result of that. So this was an attempt from us, the department, and a couple of other stakeholders as well, including Max, to sort of address that issue. So I'm going to turn this over, if you're okay with that, Madam Chair, to our first testifier and from the High School for the Recording
Arts. Hello, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for allowing me to speak this morning.
Will you please announce or give your name for the record?
Yes. My name is Paula Anderson. I am the education director and English teacher at High School for Recording Arts. And the need for this bill really became apparent to us a couple of years ago when the state was applying for Race to the Top funding. And we were on the persistently lowest achieving schools list for having a graduation rate under 60% and on time, meaning by 18, graduation rate of under 60%. Yet half of our students are 18 or older. Many do not come to us until they are already 19 or 20. We are a dropout recovery program. It is in the first sentence of the mission of our charter to serve overaged, undercredited, at-risk students, much like an area learning center or a contract alternative. We were surprised when we saw the PLAS list, the persistently lowest achieving schools list, to see that there were no area learning centers or contract alternatives on the list, yet there were 12 at-risk charter schools on the list. And we felt that since, one, it was mathematically impossible for us to ever achieve a 60% on-time graduation rate and continue to serve the students that we serve, we felt that this was unjust. And we spent a good part of that year trying to fight our inclusion on that list, and were eventually granted a waiver. Now that the state has applied for a waiver to No Child Left Behind, we fear the same situation will come up again, and we fear that it will come up again with the rewrite of No Child Left Behind. And so we feel that now is the time to be proactive and to create a special category of charter schools that serve at-risk students, meaning students that meet the graduation incentives program criteria. When area learning centers were created, they were wisely excluded from some of these No Child Left Behind consequences because it was well understood that the students had many risk factors and that they were not expected to graduate in 4 years, particularly if they were enrolling in the school at age 19 or 20. And we feel that it is common sense, and everybody that we talk to seems to think that it is common sense, to treat charters that serve the same population in a similar manner. So we bring this before you today for your consideration, and we thank you for taking the time to think about this. It's just a handful of schools across the state, but failure to act on this could have devastating consequences. We've spoken to four people from the State Department. They've all been supportive, yet feel that there's a little bit of language that needs to be tweaked to avoid some unintended consequences, and we are open to doing that. We have also spoken with MACS, and we have the support of the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs, which represents the area learning centers, which could be seen as in competition with us, yet they've been very supportive. They were, in fact, the first organization to support us, and we are on the MAP legislative platform. Does anybody have any questions?
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Anderson. Representative Woodard, do you have any other testifiers?
Yes, we have a couple more testifiers, and we understand the shortness of time, and we'll make sure that we get to the point quick.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record. Yeah.
My name is Dave Hagman. I'm the president of MAP and also the director and special education teacher at Northern Lights Community School, a charter school, grades 6 through 12 near Grand Rapids. We're in our seventh year of operation and serve about 110 kids. We also work collaboratively with a number of rural charter schools that also have this issue to confront. I spoke with Mark Willard, who's the director at Pillager Charter School. They have 96% of their kids who would qualify for an area learning center through HSGI. We have 95% of our 105 kids who would qualify for an area learning center. And Julie Johnson Wilberg from Voyagers Charter School in Bemidji said that they have 96%. Julie also mentioned in demographically related to her population that 30% of her population is special education, 30% of their kids are involved in the court system, and 70% of their kids are behind in credits. So these are just three examples of rural schools that face the same issue in terms of our kids really are ALC type kids, very at risk, and we think this legislation is very important for our kids. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hagman.
Are there questions?
We'll move on to the next testifier. Please state your name for the record.
My name is David Edward Ellis, and I'm the founder of High School for Recording Arts, and I'm here to testify to my experience and understanding of this issue. We were here working with some of the legislators in this room with regards to this issue about a year and a half ago. It was a horrific fight with the State Department and trying to rectify, you know, our school just getting caught up in the gears of policy. And in lieu of them wanting to acquire a grant, it was going to just be something that was swept under the rug again. And I think with regards to the issue of the gap that everyone says is so important, I think this is very important with regards to that, because it's a way that it's used to push kids out of school, and they don't get a real opportunity to learn and have a chance to get involved in school. So they create a system that excludes them, and then it makes it look like the test scores are going up. We have principals and counselors during test time, they'll come and drop their kids off at High School for Recording Arts and say, this is a good school for you. You know, you like music, you want to do something like that. So my concern is really getting at the true problem that we're experiencing in our community and not hiding it and saying that it doesn't exist because the test score goes up. We're dealing with one child at a time, an individual, a real live human being. And they're coming from chaotic family systems and chaotic communities. There are 30% of our kids are homeless at some times mm-hmm. during the year, and it's something that really needs to be addressed. I think that this is the beginning of that problem being solved is right here in Minnesota. I myself am a product of an alternative school, which was a precursor to the charter movement, St. Paul Open School. And without that school, I don't think I would probably be alive or here to testify with you today. That was a school that took me in. They understood that I had a alternative, hands-on, project-based, experiential style of learning, and that's needed for a lot of our young people in our community. And if this isn't addressed, then we're constantly trying to spend all of our energy, our staff, our administration, we're fighting a crazy issue where we could be spending our energy really helping a lot of young people become successful. So I'm encouraging and asking you to recognize this problem and do something about it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Ellis. Yep. Representative Norton?
Thank you, and I just want to stand in support of this effort. I've had the opportunity for a couple years, not for a year or two now, but to mentor some kids from the High School for Recording Arts. They were very active in the primary seatbelt and graduated driver's license activities, and I had a young lady that followed me around the Capitol for a couple days a few years ago, and she too spoke about this issue as someone who came from, I believe she was homeless at the time, had bounced around to many homes. This school was her saving grace, and she spoke very passionately about how she may not be a traditional student, but she had high goals set for herself, and with a little support like this type of school, she was determined to graduate and move on. And it was really a great experience. And so whether they be charter schools or just area learning centers, I think it speaks to that issue. We talked about it in another bill the other day, which is, you know, how important is four-year graduation versus a 5 or 6 year graduation? What can we do to make certain that all students get that diploma, even if it takes them another year or two? And I think this is an opportunity for us to support that concept. So I speak in support of your bill, and thanks for being here.
Representative Woodard, would you like to make a comment?
No, I would like to thank Representative Norton. Thank you for that. I agree. These are some of the coolest people I've dealt with here in the legislature, so I appreciate that.
Representative Woodard, do you have any other testifiers today?
The department may want to testify, but it looks like they're still conferring over there, and I believe St. Paul would like to testify as well.
All right.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools, and I've had a couple conversations with the author and with the department about the issue. And I do remember when this came up, when the state identified several persistently low-performing schools, because we have actually Humboldt High School is one of those low-performing schools. And we did get a turnaround grant, and we're in the process of mm-hmm. that right now. And the issue that I raised about the bill, especially since there's been a lot of talk about the four-year graduation rate this year as a measure of performance for schools, is that Humboldt, for example, would have 60% of the kids that would qualify for the graduate incentive program. And as I told Representative Woodard, and based on our population, we do have many, many kids who need to be in school a fifth or sixth or even seventh year, depending when they come to the country and when they enroll in our schools. And the only issue I have related to that is that I think that as we're looking at graduation rates with high-risk kids, whether they're a charter school or a high school, they should be treated the same. Under the rules for NCLB right now, we have, I think maybe some of you have had the pleasure of having the LEAP Academy kids come here, and they are kids that are new to the country, and that is an ALC for us. What happens there, though, is that we do not calculate a four-year graduation rate for that school, but their rate defaults back to their high school. So when you look at our graduation rate that people lament about not being a four-year graduation rate, it's because the LEAP kids' graduation rate goes back and is counted against the graduation rate of the high school. And so I don't we don't know what happens to the graduation rate. So all I'm saying is if we're going to do this, I think we should do it for all the schools that have kids that qualify for the graduation program.
Ms. Gilbert, thank you for your testimony. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone else who would like to speak in favor of this bill?
And Madam Chair, if I can just address, we've had some good conversations with Ms. Gilbert about this, and I think she raises some good points. The issue that we have that we've been working with the department on and MACS and other stakeholders and MAPS is that because we're really dealing with charter school law under this one, it's very difficult for us to develop language that also then would affect St. Paul or traditional public schools. I think what I would prefer to do is if we can just address the charter school issue that we see here and then work on addressing the issues that St. Paul addresses and that Representative Norton addresses, because I think they're important questions and really do need to be addressed. I just don't know that I can get to that in this particular bill.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else who would like to address the committee in support of this bill?
Madam Chair, members, my name is Darren Cordy. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Education. Yes, as Representative Woodard mentioned, we are generally supportive of this concept of, we understand what schools like High School for the Recording Arts, the type of students that they take and how a four-year graduation rate may not necessarily make sense for a student like that when calculating their accountability. First of all, the one issue that we do have with this bill is the 60% measure. We do feel that that should probably be a little bit higher. We were looking in the neighborhood of 75%. It would make us a little bit more comfortable. This might alleviate some of the situations that Ms. Gilbert was talking about where you have schools that are public schools that have these types of, students who are under the graduation incentives, 60% rate. And then also we do acknowledge the difficulty that that Representative Woodard has in this bill, as he said, dealing with charter law and then dealing with public law, it's two different things. But we do think that if we are going to address attribution of graduation rate in this bill for charter schools, it probably should be addressed under the ALC issue as well. So with that, I'd take any questions you might have.
Representative Peterson S.
Thank you. Just a question for our representative from the department. And what is the rate for our other alternative schools? Is that 75% or?
Madam Chair, member, representative, the way that I believe, as Ms. Gilbert stated, that it's not measured at the ALC, the graduation rate would be attributed back to the school that the student came from. So, most ALCs contract with their original school, with different school districts, and the districts send their students to the ALC. So that student's graduation rate would be attributed back to the public school from which they came.
Thank you.
Representative Greiling.
Madam Chair, can I just address that real quick?
Certainly.
That you kind of hit the crux of the problem, I think, Representative Peterson, is there is no school to go back to. And so that's what we tried to figure out in some of the language that we worked with the department on. And that's why there's a couple of amendments that we're not going to move because they don't quite hit on it, because it says it would go back to the charter district, and the charter district doesn't exist. So, it doesn't really happen that way, which is why we're trying to address this from the charter school standpoint, and that it doesn't go anywhere. They have to be the school of last resort for the graduation rate. Does that make sense?
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Woodard, you are wrestling with the problem, as Mr. Ellis said, that we've been wrestling with for quite a while. And so I compliment you for coming up with something that that keeps the discussion alive and gets us further down the road of coming to a solution. One thing that troubles me as we're talking here about charter schools and public schools, they're all public schools, and so I just have to get that word in there. And then, as people on this committee know, I'm a stickler. One of my pet peeves is if we give a benefit to, if we don't have a threshold bill, we give something to some and not to others when others would qualify. So I'm very sensitive to Ms. Gilbert's concern as well. To me, all public schools should be treated the same, and charter schools, even though they have their own section of law, are public schools the same as the others. So I'm in a dilemma. I definitely support doing something about this. I'm, you know, the Recording Arts School is a lot of our favorites around here, Representative Norton said, because we've heard from so many of the staff and students, and we like the students they take in and the results that they get. And so I'm kind of in a quandary, and I wonder if I could ask again. You said you didn't think you could deal with both types of public schools. Are you saying in this bill today or this whole year?
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Greiling, in this bill, and we have been working to do that, to find a way to make that connection. And the department's been working very hard on it as well and can't make that connection. Ms. Larson has helped us try to do that as well. And we've come to the conclusion based on those discussions that we need to deal with it separately. And I am open to dealing with that separately, separate from this bill. I don't know about deadlines and those kinds of things, whether we can get that done this year. But maybe we can at least, we can request an informational hearing, introduce a bill that starts discussing that, because I think I think it's a good point.
Representative Greiling, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up comment. I would strongly urge us, and you, Representative Woodard, or whoever all is working on this, to do both this year. I don't like to see us go down the path of having one regulation for charter schools and another for public schools. When we should be looking at students and all the students who are in public schools who are caught in this web. The students should be treated the same. And so I would strongly urge us to do both this year, and I think there's plenty of time.
Mr. McHenry, would you like to make a comment?
Madam Chair, members, I just wanted, we were working on a way to maybe clarify this a little bit, and I wanted to share this with Representative Woodard as a possible amendment.
Madam Chair, should we possibly lay this over and hear it, if we can, later this morning, and give us an opportunity to do that so we don't bog down the committee?
Okay, thank you. So House File 2801 will be laid over for consideration later this morning. All right, we will move on to Representative Keel's House File 2530.
We're getting longer fast.
Representative Keel, if you would move your bill, please.
Thank you. I'd like to move House File 2530 to the General Register.
Proceed with presenting your bill.
Thank you very much. In the interest of time, and I know we have a lot to do today, I am just going to have Mr. Schneiderwand go ahead and introduce this bill.
Mr. Schneiderman, would you please give your name for the record?
Yes. Excuse me, Madam Chair. My name is Kirk Schneiderwand on staff of the Minnesota School Boards Association. And this is a very simple bill, and I think that what we're trying to do is make the date of notification for probationary teachers and non-probationaries the same. And what happened last session was they changed those dates for probationary teachers and moved them from July 1 to June 1. And so the intent behind this bill is to make it consistent for July 1. And the reason for that is that school districts, whether we like it or not, are very dependent on what happens in this house here. And when they are going through the spring scheduling session, they're looking at their budget, the more time that they have to make decisions, they make better decisions. And so what we're suggesting here is to move that date to July 1 for both probationary and non-probationary teachers. So we don't have confusion during the springtime when we go through the process of non-renewing probationary teachers or placing non-probationary teachers on ULA. And so we're asking for this to be consistent. I think one of the other issues is that the more time we have, the better decisions we make. And so we're suggesting moving this back to July 1 to make it consistent, because what I also want to say is that many times superintendents and administrators will have discussions with those probationary teachers ahead of time, and July 1 is the final date. Some school districts within their contracts may agree to a June 1 date already, so the July 1 is the end date, but there are practices where school districts do let their probationary teachers know well beforehand so they can get a head start. If they're looking for new jobs, that would give them an opportunity. So we would like to make this change, to make it more consistent and understandable for our administrators and school boards.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Keel, do you have any other testifiers this morning?
Not that I believe, unless anyone else has an input.
This is a public hearing. Is there anyone else who would like to speak in favor of 2530? Is there anyone who would like to speak in opposition or with concerns about House File 2530? Are there? We'll close that portion of the hearing. Is there anyone with questions for our testifier and Representative Keel? Representative Keel, would you like to renew your motion, please?
I would like to renew my motion to have this 2530 go to the General Register. Thank you.
All those in favor of House File 2530, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Same sign. Thank you.
Thank you, members and Madam Chair.
Welcome, Madam Chair, to the committee, and we have a House File 2759, and I see you have an amendment. Do you want to move your amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move to 759, recommended to pass and be placed in the General Register. And yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A1 amendment, the H2759A1 amendment.
Madam Chair, would you like to describe the amendment?
Yes, I will explain the amendment. Members, if you're looking at the original, these are two insertions, one on line 14, which would allow for the board to notify the licensee of the penalty for failing to make timely payment of the fee, and on line 18, that if the board, this is the Board of School Administrators, would suspend a licensed school administrator for failing to pay that fee, that it would immediately notify the district currently employing the school administrator of the school administrator suspension. So those are clarifying additions to 2759, which I will explain as soon as we act on the amendment.
Members, any question on the A1 amendment? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Continue, Chair Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This proposal came late from the Board of School Administrators, and Mr. Stanmack could not be here today because I believe a family member died, and the funeral ended up being this morning, and he felt really bad. He showed up in my office last Friday afternoon and spent probably an hour explaining to me the Board of School Administrators, and then I told him, well, I served with Representative Mark Biskins, who created this, so I knew a little bit about it. And then I did, of course, go to the original author and ask for his opinion on these changes that Mr. Mack wanted to suggest. What has been happening in this organization, and I know a couple of board members are here who could address it, is that there are a number of men and women who are licensed to be administrators, and this little organization that consists of the executive director and part-time help has been overwhelmed with getting notices out for renewals of these fees, and they're trying to become more efficient, and they're trying to modernize, and so in doing that, they have spent an enormous amount of money on postage, just reminding administrators that they have this fee to pay, and that They have to send out repeated notices to remind them to pay the fee. So Mr. Mack wanted to make the organization more efficient. He is paid, he told me, I think $59,000 a year to do this. As you know, he's retired from, I think, the Robbinsdale School District, maybe a superintendent, a very interesting gentleman, and I enjoyed my visit with him. But I think the point of this is efficiency, and the one part that I want to call your attention to that is brand new is that the board would also like to have the ability to disapprove preparation programs. And I would have to say that Mr. Mack and I talked maybe more extensively about preparation programs for school administrators than we did about the fee and making that process more efficient. They feel very strongly that there is a need for change in the training of school administrators, and so when proposals come to them from various organizations or from universities or colleges, that they also would like to have the privilege to disprove rather than just always approving them. They want to have that discussion, in other words, with the preparation program that's submitted to them so that they can ask probably more pressing questions about how today's world is changing for our school administrators. And with that, Madam Chair, I have no testifiers unless Ms. Sundin wants to come forward, or I know there's another board member in the audience as well. Or questions from?
Madam Chair, we have a question. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I actually served on this committee before it kind of became the official thing that it is now. It was when it was more of a volunteer yes. board, and I served on that for a number of years. Can you explain to me why, if there's this issue of having to mail out reminders for the $75 annually, why we don't do a multiple-year licensing for these school administrators? It seems to me that might...
I will call on Ms. Sundin, who serves on the board, to answer that question.
Welcome to the committee. Can you please introduce yourself and provide your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Erickson, for your leadership on this. And back at the beginning. I'm a public member of the Board of School Administrators. I was appointed by Governor Pawlenty, and about a couple of years ago, we would be appreciative of a multi-year. That doesn't seem to be, that hasn't been a part of the discussion. We just were hoping that the ability to collect could have a little oomph behind it. So that it's a rather new agency, as you know, and there still are administrators that don't understand why it exists and that it was originated by the administrator profession itself to add to its professional accountability and develop rules and to make judgments about preparation programs and to keep track of professional development. So I think it's a communication effort as much as it is anything, and we, Director Mack has certainly improved that, and so he goes to, I think, almost every preparation program and talks to budding administrators about the board and what it does, and he also goes to every meeting of every administrator organization to also do the same. So we think we'll be all right if we have if we can add a little bit of threat, if you will.
And Mr.
Representative Norton.
And I appreciate that. And you know, it was an interesting board to serve on. I think a lot of the time I spent were when there was a problem, removal of administrators or sanctioning. It was a learning experience for me. I guess I would just say it seems to me the board has a lot of important responsibilities, and spending a lot of time and effort collecting $75 a year from each administrator seems like something that shouldn't be so onerous. So, well, you know, I'll be supportive of maybe what you're doing this year, but I would encourage you and others, and I'll help in the future if you want, to make this less about collecting fees and more about doing the other work that the board does. and perhaps looking at a multi-year licensing, as administrators like teachers and others, once their license should be able, that license should last for longer than a year, in my opinion. And so I'd be interested in working with you, but thank you for that explanation.
Ms. Sundin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Norton, I would agree with you, and but we are also hopeful, and we think it's going to happen rather quickly, that we will be able to automate the payment of the fees. That also will help a lot. And I just say that we're Director Mack here, he would give the analogy that he probably gave you, that it's rather difficult to run a small agency, state agency, the same way that the United Way runs its collections, which is kind of on people's goodwill. So that's why we're here. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sundin. Any other questions for Ms. Sundin from the members? If not, thank you very much. Anyone else? Here to testify in favor of House File 2759. Anyone here that would like to testify in opposition to House File 2759? If not, Madam Chair, you want to renew your motion?
Yes, I renew my motion that 2759, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register.
Thank you. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Members, the next bill is also Chair Erickson's House File 2835. Chair Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I'd like to move 2835 recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. Members, this is just a word change, just a little a change from a clause to a phrase in Section 128.22, Subdivision 1 of our statutes. And I ask for your support.
Members, any questions for Chair Erickson on this House File 2835?
Mr. Chair, I love Representative Greiling smiling at me. So.
Representative Greiling.
No, she, I, oh, does she have a question too?
Yes.
Well, I,
oh dear.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erickson, I just have a comment. First of all, I like your orange, and I sure don't have any orange in my wardrobe, or I would have honored MS Day as well here today.
Thank you.
And I sure do also like your vehicle bill.
Thank you.
It's perfect for a former English teacher.
Well, Representative Erickson.
I have to confess that the new researcher for our department, who, like Shannon, does, you know, little recommendations to questions. Her question to me was, what grammatical rule did we break in statute now that you're changing this? So thank you very much. So, Mr. Chair, I have renewed my motion.
Representative Benson.
Just a quick one, just a little comment. And I don't know exactly, you know, what caused this other, maybe the grammatical issue, but it seems to me, just on the record, that parents are always the primary ones responsible for acquiring all knowledge, skills, and citizenship, and mathematics and science, and tying one's shoes. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Representative Benson. Anyone else would like to testify in favor of House File 2835? Seeing no one, anybody that would like to testify in opposition to House File 2835? Seeing none, Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I did renew my motion that 2835 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register.
All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Yep. Oh.
Okay, in a game of musical chairs, I am now the chair. Next up, we have House File 2651, Representative Loon. Welcome to the committee, Representative Loon. I will move for the passage of House File 2651 with a move to the General Register. Representative Loon, you also have an A1 amendment.
I do. And I apologize. I was just turning off my phone, so it didn't ring. It's tended to do that at inopportune times, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
The A1 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A1 amendment for Representative Loon.
I'll
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Erickson moves the A1 amendment to House File 2651.
Thank you. And I'll briefly explain the amendment. It's quite brief, short, and I think we may need to make a couple of technical adjustments. And if I may, I'd like to also add two additional words to the amendment.
Very good.
The legislation deals with the discretion of school boards to authorize suspension without pay for a teacher that's been charged with a felony, pending hearing and final suspension of that issue, but indicates that the board must reimburse the teacher if the resulting action of that hearing and that does not result in suspension, termination, or discharge. So the first part of the amendment, page 2, line 9, the original bill mentions salary or compensation. And in talking to Education Minnesota, which has raised some concerns, I'd like to further explain through this amendment benefits. It would add the word benefits. And any other employment-related compensation, which is in the amendment, and I'd like to add two additional words, including pensions, after compensation.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that to addition.
Representative Erickson moves the addition of two words to the wording on line 1.3 of the amendment, A1 amendment, after the word compensation, including pension. Is that correct, Representative Loon?
Yes. Including pensions.
Pensions, plural.
Contributions.
Okay. Representative Loon, are there any other oral amendments to your amendment?
Mr. Chair, I misspoke. I need to say including pension contributions.
Representative Erickson.
Yes, I will withdraw my original motion and ask that it read including pension contributions.
Sure. Representative Erickson withdraws her previous motion and now moves for the inclusion of the words including pension contributions to line 1.3 of the A1 amendment after the word compensation. Any other oral amendments, Representative Loon?
No, that's it at this point. And again, in the second line of the amendment, would strike the word a penalty to from line 2.10. So again, it would indicate the board must reimburse the teacher for any salary, compensation, benefits, and the other language we just added if the final decision of the board or arbitrator does not result in suspension, termination, or discharge of the teacher.
Very good, Representative Loon. We do have maybe some clarifying remarks from Ms. Larson regarding the oral amendment.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loon, thank you. Did you intend on the A1 amendment to keep 1.4 or remove 1.4 from the amendment?
No, she's keeping it. I'm not addressing 1.4. It would stay as written in the amendment. I was just explaining it.
Mr. Chairman, members,
Ms. Larson.
For the record, may I clarify what I understand to be Representative Loon's intent with respect to the H2651A1 amendment?
Please do.
On page 1, line 3 of the amendment, delete the word compensation that appears in the amendment. And after what it exists as amended on 1.3, add the following. And after compensation, insert including pension contributions.
Is that correct, Representative Loon?
I believe so. So, Ms. Larson, could you read the entire line as it would now appear with the amendment as you've described it?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative Loon, pertaining to page 2, line 9 of the bill, after salary, insert benefits as it appears on the A1 amendment, and after or insert or any other employment related, and after compensation, insert including pension contributions.
Yes, that's correct.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Loon. Representative Kath, to this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I would be concerned that it's not just about a pension contribution. There's also service credit that goes along with pensions as well. And so I guess it would be nice to see something with a reflection towards service credit, too. I face the same thing when I leave to come for the legislature, that I have to then try to regain my service credit so I'm recognized as a teacher, even though I'm not there. So I think the idea is that along with the pension contributions to add in there, and service credit would be good to have as well.
Representative Loon, to that point?
If we could, I'd like to perhaps have a little testimony, and if we could we come back to address that issue?
Representative Kath, would you be okay if we tabled that, thought about it, and then came back to it in a few minutes?
That's fine. I just didn't know if we wanted to have, we could have somebody come down and talk about it, and then you could incorporate it into your amendment if there's somebody that would like to testify about that right now, and then that way we could get this all done in one foul swoop.
Representative Loon?
However the chair would wish to proceed on that, if you want to talk about that first or get into the bill, and then that particular issue would be your choice.
Representative Loon, I think we should address this issue first, get okay. it passed, and then move on to the guts of the bill.
All right. Thank you.
Ms. Allswiger, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota. And I think that Representative Kath is exactly right. I think Representative Loon was trying to be helpful in including in pensions. And pensions would be broader. And while I think that there was some assistance to try to clarify it with the contributions, by then just naming pension contributions, I think that there's some questions as to whether or not they actually get the service credit. And I think that by including and service credit would clarify and make it more complete and understood.
Representative Loon, do you have any thoughts or concerns about the addition of adding and service credit to your to our Representative Erickson's amendment?
I think there's another person who would like to offer some testimony on this point.
Very good. Thank you. And state your name for the record. And
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Roger Ernst, and I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principals Associations. And I visited with Representative Loon about this section and this language in advance. And just one of the things about it, the way the amendment is structured, when it says that the board is going to reimburse, what the board pays are pension contributions. They don't pay the pension. So it wouldn't make sense to put in here that you would reimburse the pension, and that's why we thought the language should say pension contributions. Okay. If you're talking about then if someone is suspended without pay for a long period of time and whether or not that individual would get service credit for that time period under TRA, you need to know that that's a very broad question, that there are other committees that start to have jurisdiction over that. You only get, and those of you that have served on the Pension Commission know this, I mean, you've heard it a million times, but you only get service credit for things that are authorized under statute. You get service credit when you provide teaching service. You get service credit if you're on sabbatical, if you're on an approved medical leave, if you're on the approved five-year leave. And so it goes far beyond, I think, what the original intent of this bill was. If you start to incorporate stuff that talks about the extension of service credit by the board for suspensions. And there's some other factors that play into that. How long are these suspensions? How many days does a teacher have to work and a principal as well for to constitute a full year of service credit? But it gets far beyond. There's some other issues that you really get into when you start talking about service credit here.
Representative Kath.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but I think the underlying question here is if this person is, you know, found not guilty, we need to make this teacher whole. You know, the fact is that you can't just say that this person, you know, if they are suspended and then they come back in because there was no guilt. I just want to make sure that this teacher is made whole. This wouldn't apply if the teacher is found guilty, of course. I mean, this is not even a question about that. But what we're saying is if there is no presumption of guilt here, we need to make sure that we're doing right by that individual who works for that school district, too.
Mr. Aronson, would you like to reply?
Well, I think that makes the point is that it's a big issue when you start Mr. Chair. My assumption with discussions with Representative Loon on this bill was that we were going to do without pay suspensions. that when we did without pay, that that didn't mean without pay or benefits. And Representative Loon and I had this conversation, that this starts getting into some minutia that in typical labor law cases, when we suspend someone for 10 days without pay, we don't discontinue their health insurance during that period. And we've done some of these in Minneapolis and St. Paul, because the statute for the suspension without pay pending the resolution of matters exists there. But Representative Kath's point is there may be a case where I assume someone could be charged with a felony. That felony case is maybe dismissed, even not necessarily gone to not guilty, but there would be an underlying discharge case that would take some time to process, and then assume that the arbitrator imposed a 10-day suspension in that case, would that person get reimbursed? I mean, that's where you're at. So this is a very, very narrow circumstance with a very technical kind of provision.
Sure.
And all of the points are valid, but as Representative Loon and I have visited about this, it gets very, very technical in the end there of whether or not there's service credit for this.
Representative Loon, this is your amendment, as moved by Chair Erickson. I'll give you the last word, unless anyone else has any thoughts.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Mr. Chair, I guess I'd like perhaps a little more time to think about that, and so I at this point, and I am taking to heart what you're bringing forth, Representative Kath, and I think we've heard this is kind of gets into a technical, very narrow issue. So at this point, I think I would prefer not to add that, but I would like to look into it a little more carefully, and perhaps that would be something we could do if the bill moves through the process.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Loon. Chair, Representative Benson.
Well, after we deal with the amendment.
Very good. Representative Erickson renews her motion to add the A1 amendment to the Representative Loon's bill 2651 to get it in the way that she would like to have it presented to the committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Representative Loon, your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. The legislation, and we kind of jumped into the back end, but I think for members realize that this is a legislation that would really bring all other school districts to some degree on par with a right that school districts for cities of the first class currently have under statute, that if a teacher is charged in the bill before you with a felony, would have the option of suspending that teacher without pay pending the outcome of a hearing and an arbitrator's work decision on what evidence exists and what should be done. The statute actually addressing cities of the first class is a little broader, so this is actually a narrower definition of those circumstances. It does not require the board to take that action. It is permissive language, and it also does indicate, as we just discussed with the amendment, in that the board must reimburse the teacher for any salary. And again, we just kind of talked about the compensation and that aspects. If the final decision of the board or arbitrator does not result in suspension, termination, or discharge of the teacher. These are difficult and rare circumstances, but it does happen in schools across Minnesota where you've got teachers charged in the criminal system with some disturbing things affecting children. And right now, unless you are a school in the cities of the first class, the board does not have the ability to suspend without pay. This causes great consternation within the communities, which when these circumstances occur, parents outraged, taxpayers outraged, and the boards, honestly, in many situations, feeling they really had their hands tied. I have talked to a couple of superintendents or former superintendents that were at school districts where they had to deal with these issues, and how very, very upsetting and concerning it was. I'll just mention one case. Donald Helmstetter was the superintendent at Blue Earth, and he was hoping to be able to be here Today he actually is away at a conference, but we had a lengthy conversation about a case back in 1994. A teacher took a group of students on a school-sponsored field trip, gave the students sleeping pills, and sexually molested one. And the board had to continue to pay this teacher full pay for several months, nearly a year, while this process played out. And you've also got the interplay here of investigation with the criminal system that's going on simultaneously. And oftentimes law enforcement will not want the school to rush into a hearing where they've gathered some sufficient evidence to move forward with that, because evidence that could be used in the criminal trial could come out during that hearing, so the board is not always under control of how quickly they can hold a hearing to begin termination process for that teacher through the due process rights. So, again, I'm trying to find a way to help districts, again, to have some ability on par with what cities of the first class have in dealing with some very rare but some really disturbing circumstances in which, again, we certainly want teachers who are exonerated and that to be made whole, and that's certainly the intent of this legislation. But we also need to balance that with some ability of the board to react to a situation in which they have some evidence and understand they've got a really bad situation on their hands, and try to protect and do their fiduciary duties and duties to their students and parents and taxpayers as well. So I'll leave it at that, and there may be others who wish to testify.
Sure. Since this is a public hearing, is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify in favor of House File 2651? Thank you very much. If you could state your name for the record, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Grace Kelleher with the Minnesota School Boards Association. This was adopted by our delegate assembly in 2006. It came from a school board who had gone through this incident, and they really left sort of holding the bag as a school board member when you're confined by law, and that cities of the first class, school districts, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, and Rochester, now have the ability to withhold pay on this. It just makes sense that we use a similar rule across Minnesota. Helps our public understand what we're doing in our response to this kind of rare event. So with that, Mr. Chairman, we would ask your support on this bill and give us the ability to continue to look into the pension issue Representative Kath raised.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify in favor of this bill? With that, then, I think what we'll do is we'll go to a couple members' questions. First off, Representative Benson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, this is, I just want to give us an opportunity to rethink this a little bit. I know that it was, you know, debated on the House floor in 2008. Representative Ammer brought it in. And there were only four in opposition, which means I probably voted in favor. So, but on the other hand, I'm really jealous of protecting this, you know, bedrock democratic value of holding people innocent until proven guilty. And there is kind of a sense about this that a school board, in a sense, has made kind of a determination in a way by suspending it. And I do understand why a school board would be wanting this right, because they are under, you know, enormous pressure from the community, who become outraged when these kinds of allegations come up. And so, you know, just to make a school board more comfortable, I'm just concerned whether we are trampling on some very basic constitutional rights and presumptions of a democratic society here in that regard. And you don't need to really respond, but I just think it should be aired. And then the other item, I'm just wondering, because I really don't know, is this policy also including administrative cadre or other school employees, regardless of their position in the organization? And I'm just assuming it is. But
Representative Loon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Benson. Yes, it would definition. The definition of teacher is fairly broad. I could read it to you from the statute if you'd like. But
no, that's okay.
Principal, supervisor,
and then Mr. Teacher. Representative Benson. Chair, one last question. I'm just wondering if you know, Representative Bloom, what is the policy in other state agencies or people who work for cities, counties, or the state government? Is this policy generally adopted throughout Minnesota government?
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Benson. I don't know the specifics, and I'm not an expert on that area. I did make a brief inquiry into this, and I believe it's the case where it's up to the employing entity of each. I don't know if it's department wide or wherever your employer is based may have a different policy with regards to that. But if I could address just really quickly the constitutional issue and that, because I think it's an important question. I also did a little research on that, and they actually, the Supreme Court did have a ruling on that constitutional question with regards to due process and that. It's an instance of a government employee, not specifically a teacher. In this particular case, it was a police officer. This person was charged with a drug felony, was suspended without pay. Eventually, the criminal charges were dismissed. And anyway, there was the petitioner sought to say that, you know, they shouldn't have been suspended without pay. And the court ruled that, you know, first there were certain criteria that had to be met with regards to, not delaying the hearing process and that, but said that, you know, his interest could have been accommodated with suspension with pay, but the Constitution does not require the government to give an employee charged with felony paid leave at taxpayer expense. Mm-hmm. So, again, I think we're talking about two different standards here.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciated Representative Benson's question, and I, too, voted for this on the floor, but also I have that concern, and I think Representative Loon gave a very excellent answer with the previous court situation. But I, one of the reasons that I support this bill when I would otherwise not like it so well is because the cities of the first class already having this opportunity. And that's always one of my bugaboos, is that they have different laws than the rest of us. And I like it that this proposal now is permissive, so the school board can look with intelligence, hopefully, at the situation. If it was like the 1994 case that Representative Loon cited, then, you know, that sounds like they had a lot of evidence and a good reason to exercise this opportunity, and then if they really didn't know but there was a charge, they could be more judicious in doing it. So my question is then, why are we not looking at changing the law for the cities of the first class to be uniform with, I think, your better proposal than what they have?
Representative Loon?
Well, Representative Greiling, I would not be opposed to that. I would not be opposed to that.
Well, then, Mr.
Representative Greiling.
Representative Loon, I would encourage you to look into expanding your bill and making it better.
Representative Loon.
I appreciate your suggestion, Representative Greiling. Thank you.
Next, Representative Peterson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Loon, you know, this is a tough one because when you're talking about felonies, that's a pretty high standard, and I do know the pressure that school boards are under when this kind of thing happens. In the same sense, I've known teachers who have been wrongly accused, and the minute that happens, that teacher is out, even if it's a wrongful accusation, and the investigation starts. And I'm just wondering, do we have any data on the number of teachers who have been accused and then found not guilty versus those who have been found guilty?
Representative Loon or Ms. Keller?
BMS, excuse me, maybe the BMS or some there must be data with the Board of Teaching or with the Department of Ed. Do we have that kind of data?
We'll start with Representative Loon, and then we can go to anyone in the audience who might have that information.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Peterson. It's a good question, and I have not found the answer to that yet. And these are questions that have arisen in terms of looking at this bill, and again, how many were formally charged that were ultimately exonerated. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's open that question up to the audience. If anyone in the audience has any credible evidence or testimony that would help support the question of Representative Peterson S., they could come forward. If not, maybe the department could get that information at some future point. Representative Peterson S.
Well, no, and I would, it's kind of, I really appreciate Representative Benson's concerns, too, because I think he expressed that for all of us. But anyway, I do have concerns for those teachers who have been wrongly accused and then found not guilty. And that period of time for the investigation can be quite long and quite lengthy. And I've known teachers who have said, that's it, I'm out of here, you know, even before the investigation is done. So it gets to be a very difficult situation. On the other hand, if I'm guilty, it's difficult to be paying them. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Representative Odrisco.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm listening to the other members of the committee, and I do share those same kinds of concerns. But when I step back from this, Representative Loon's bill doesn't say when there is a suspension, there's automatically going to be no pay. It's permissive in nature. And if I happen to be a school board member, that's the context that we're looking at this, I'm going to be thinking long and hard whether I want to assume any additional liability for suspending someone, finding out that individual was not guilty of these charges, being reinstated, and having to deal with the civil liability associated with that. So what may end up happening is I may go ahead and say, even though we have this permissive language in law, I'm not going to risk the taxpayers' dollars. We're going to suspend with pay and benefits and continue to move forward. It simply allows for permissive language for school districts if they believe that they want to take that risk of suspending someone without pay. And in consultation with Representative Loon, she also said that those funds would have to be held in escrow. And I would think that a district would say, if we have to hold the funds anyhow, during an investigation because of a suspension, we may as well go ahead and pay. I think you're going to find most districts not changing their policies because they wouldn't want to assume that additional risk or liability. So again, it's permissive. It's not that we're moving from we automatically have to pay to we'll never pay. I think that's going to still be an individual district choice.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify in favor of this bill? If not, we will... If not, we will move to those that might have some concerns about this bill. Ms. Allsweiger, would you state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allsweiger, Education Minnesota, and I'm just going to pose some questions for you. Should maybe there be a difference between some state employees who aren't as susceptible to claims such as a student saying that a teacher did this or did not do this? A teacher has maybe 200 students a day, and 200 those 200 students have 200 or 400 parents. So they're subject to some claims, and so should there be a difference? And I would say that this legislation now, you know, we've been working with Representative Loon, would not make a teacher whole, because we are not putting the pension service credit in. And you're never going to make a teacher who is innocent whole after those claims have been made. The reputation will follow them forever, to the point that they might even move. And it will affect their family forever. And we're not here to try to make changes to law so that only we don't want to change it so that we're protecting the people who are guilty. We are here to represent those who are innocent and ask those questions. Do you think it's okay for the school board to really become a jury and decide if a person should be paid or not, because as we've said before, is it okay to presume that they are guilty? Would a school district drag their feet or go quicker depending on if they're paid or not? We think that it's possible that a school board would try to speed it up if they're paying this teacher. So I think that there's a number of questions to consider. And we understand this is a difficult situation. We don't want anything bad to happen to students. We don't want any teacher to commit a felony. But there are situations when teachers have been innocent and have been set up.
Thank you, Ms. Allswiger. I appreciate your concerns. I think we have a question for you from Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Allswiger. I do support the service credits being added, as Representative Kath suggested. So I'll give that recommendation to Representative Loon. And my question for you is, would Education Minnesota, I'm guessing that you would think Representative Loon's proposal is better than what's in current law for cities of the first class. I'm wondering if you would help Representative Loon make sure that we have a uniform law for cities of the first class and all the rest.
Ms. Allswiger.
Well, this is not making the law the same as the cities of the first class. And we've had our attorneys look at it, and there is a belief that this would make it just like the cities of the first class, and it is not. And so I think that maybe you'd want to have some more discussions about the differences between the cities of the first class and this legislation. And it gets quite complicated, actually.
Ms. Allswiger, if I could, so does this bill get us closer to the cities of the first class? And if so, how much closer?
Mr. Chair, I would rather have our attorney answer that, but there are two different, whether if a cities of the first class is going to suspend a teacher without pay, it's generally as a result of a charge on an employment issue that's leading to termination rather than a felony. Certainly, if a teacher was convicted of a felony or to that point, or they decided to make an employment decision to terminate, that's when they could suspend without pay, but not at the level of being charged with a felony. If they were charged with a felony outside of the school district that maybe wasn't going to affect their employment situation, they do not, I believe, have the right to suspend them without pay. So this is creating a different standard.
Thank you, Ms. Allswiger. Representative O'Driscoll.
Ms. Allswiger. I know you wanted to testify in front of the committee, so I wanted to give you your full due today. I want to go back to a question that Representative Peterson asked raised before, and that was, how many do we have people that we know, and the chair had asked for that. In your experience with Education Minnesota, could you maybe talk about how many cases a year or a 10-year period of time that you've had, and maybe just kind of walk through some of the breakdown and statistics of individuals, obviously not giving us names and districts and those types of things, but more in the aggregate. Is it 10 per year that we're dealing with? Is it 100 per year that we're dealing with within the ranks of your
members? Ms. Allswiger.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, I really don't have an answer for that. And I want to make it clear, it's not that we are opposed completely to this bill. It's we just have some concerns about it. We want to fix the problems with it. If someone has done something wrong, certainly they've done something wrong, but there's those people who are innocent. And I guess it's a good thing to ask yourself, are we fixing something that really isn't a big problem? And how much is it really going to cost a district? And I wish I had the answer for you, Representative O'Driscoll, but I do not.
Representative O'Driscoll, a follow-up?
Please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'd like you to comment on the statement that I made earlier, that do you believe that most school districts would probably not want to assume the additional liability and suspend without pay and try to minimize their exposure by suspending with pay, even though they had this permissive language in statute, assuming it gets to statute?
Ms. Allswiger.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, I would probably have to have our attorneys answer some of this, but my guess is that if you pass a law to make it permissive that they don't have to pay somebody, I don't know what liability they would have, because you are making it okay for them to do that. So I don't think that there would be any liability. The only liability is on the part of the teacher. And a school district has a contract with a teacher to keep them there all year. A teacher cannot break a contract in the middle of the year. Even if a teacher wants to leave in the middle of the year, you can't go. There's maybe a better offer someplace else. They could make $20,000 more at a different job, have better health insurance. They can't leave. It's a contract with the school board for the entire year. But in this situation, you are saying the school board doesn't have to hold up to their contract for the whole year. Even if there is a charge, I understand there might be something bad there. But what you're doing is saying that the contract, the teacher has to fill the contract the whole year, but the school board doesn't. Even if the school board did, even if a principal did something bad and the teacher says, I'm leaving, the teacher couldn't leave. And so really it's a different standard for employees and employers. And again, I'm saying I'm not necessarily 100% opposing this bill, but I think there are some real questions that you should consider. And so it might be less fair to a teacher to say, okay, well, you know, we're getting you out of the contract, but if you want to leave, we're not going to let you leave.
Representative O'Driscoll, a follow-up.
Very, my last comment, and then I'll defer. We are escrowing those funds for teachers if that the individual is suspended and it is found that they are, it was without, after the investigation that the charges were unwarranted and things, that teacher is being made whole. And I realized she didn't exactly answer my question from before. You kind of went down that. And I understand. I put you probably in kind of an uncomfortable spot answering that question because asking you to speculate. But I'm not asking you to speculate when I say that the money is in escrow and that teacher would still be made whole, correct?
Ms.
Salzweiger?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, I would ask counsel or research staff if it is in escrow. I may have missed that in the bill. Is the money held in escrow in this bill?
Representative Loon has that answer.
Representative Loon.
Mr. Chair, the word escrow is not included in the language of the bill, but it does say the board must reimburse. So, you know, for whatever manner in which the board would normally have funds for that purpose.
So in this situation, it seems like the issue of where the money is maybe not so relevant because the statute says the board must reimburse. Any other thoughts, Representative O'Driscoll?
Oh, thank you.
Okay, Ms. Salzweiger, you mentioned lawyers earlier. The next three members who have questions are Kiefer, Kath, and Keel. Sounds like a law firm. It's not, but Representative Kiefer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Salzweiger, you just said something before, too, about teachers might be set up, and that does raise a red flag for me, especially since we talk about keeping good teachers in the classroom, and sometimes good teachers are the tough ones, and kids will, you know, want to get revenge. I just want to be really clear with this bill that the school board, the principal, and I'm hoping these folks, I think they do have real common sense, and they know when there's a setup, I would hope. Based, I don't know, I'm just kind of making an assumption, but I just want to hear from you if you feel there's some cover for the principals and for good teachers who might know that there's a setup. That's all. Thank you.
Ms. Salzweiger?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiefer, I mean that's a good question, but let's just say you have a first or second year teacher who's, you know, on probation. And maybe they haven't proven themselves to the community. Maybe they gave a student a D when the student felt they should have a B, but every other teacher would say the student should have a D. How, and you get a groundswell of parents saying, I can't believe this happened to my son, and now he's not going to get into the college that he wants to get into. And pressure to put, change the grade. You know, it happens. I shared with you the case before where a young teacher of the age that, you know, back in maybe in the 80s, whenever, the people smoked marijuana more often, and this young teacher ends up with enough marijuana in her briefcase, and she's charged with a felony. A bright young teacher who wants to teach forever, and would the board, under political pressure, say, no, we're not, you know, you get a couple of parents who say, I'm not going to, we don't want you to pay her. You know, there's political decisions that are made, and there isn't going to be, no matter what you do, you know, you're going to have people unhappy with when you pass this or you don't pass this. You're going to have people unhappy. People are going to be hurt. We think it's more fair to make sure that you keep that contract for the whole year. And I know I'm not answering your question completely, but we know that these things happen.
Representative Kath.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I guess mine is for Representative Loon. What is the threshold under Cities of the First Class, and is it just felony charge, or is there something else? Is it felony charge that may lead to termination, or how is that worded? Because I think this may answer some of our questions, too, that it isn't maybe just a blanket felony to have under this, but to say something that maybe will follow with the Cities of the First Class. So if you could answer that, that'd be great.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Kath. And if Ms. Larson... She's engaged in conversation. I want to make sure I have the proper statute, but I believe it's one. I'm sorry. I want to make sure I'm quoting the correct statute in law that applies to cities of the first class in this instance. 122A41. Is it subdivision 12 or? I believe so. So subdivision 12. Again, 122A.41. Suspension pending hearing. Semicolon salary. After charges are filed against a teacher, the school board may suspend the teacher from regular duty. If the teacher is suspended or removed after the final decision, the board may, in its discretion, determine the teacher's salary or compensation as of the time of filing the charges. If the final decision is favorable to the teacher, the board must not abate the teacher's salary or compensation. So, again, you know, to Representative Greiling's issue, I would be perfectly happy to cut and paste this language into the bill we're hearing today. Again, I think you know, there's a couple of important standards here, but one is that school districts and all teachers in those districts are treated the same, and that is not the system we currently have.
Representative Kath, follow up.
Yeah, I guess that's my question then is how this is being utilized in the cities of the first class, and is the I would want to have the same threshold, I guess is what I'm looking for here, is that they should be at the same level of status, and I from there then I'd want to know how the cities of the first class have utilized this, and just to make sure that there is parity there, I think would be important. Thank you.
Representative Loon, anything?
Thank you. I want to thank the committee for a good discussion about
this. Representative Loon, I'm sorry. Just related to that point exactly.
Sorry, I thought you were wrapping up.
No, I'm not, unfortunately.
I have time, thank you.
Yes. Well, we have 10 minutes, so we don't have too much time. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. Unfortunately, as a school board chair, I had some of these experiences. And I want to point out that school boards have to have not only the trust of the teachers and their contracts, but they also have to have the trust of the public. And it was a very difficult decision. But the law says you cannot suspend, and now you have to pay them. And of my experience, we don't have plenty of time to talk about that, but it would have been nice to have suspended that pay eventually, not necessarily the minute you know. I think the board and the school, the superintendent, and all have to weigh all that's happening and actually know. You know, you just don't do it the first minute that you're told there's a problem. You really have to weigh the whole action. And I like the fact that we can suspend pay. I also think it has to be used very judiciously and very carefully, because you do not want to damage, you know, a teacher without pay that is coming back. That's very detrimental. They're expecting that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keel. We have two members who'd like to ask questions. Representative Peterson asks, followed by Representative Greiling.
And this is just a question, I guess, to follow up with one of the previous questions. And it's my experience, at least. Let's say a student decides, this is how most in senior high, but this teacher touched me. I don't, you know, in a class, inappropriate touch. It's my experience that the principal at that point doesn't have any choice. I think that investigation begins immediately, and the teacher is almost taken out of the classroom immediately. I'd like to ask legal counsel or somebody who knows, maybe the School Board Association knows, if that's the case. But it's my experience that they begin that investigation. It's reported then to authorities, and then it begins immediately that there's not this given, you know, discussion with could this be right, could it be wrong. But I'd like to know the process. Do you know the process for...
To that point, please step forward. Remind us of your name and who you represent, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Grace Kelleher with the Minnesota School Boards Association. I really defer to legal counsel. They're the best ones to answer that question, but I believe we can immediately discharge for sexual crimes and child abuse. So I think there's some immediate discharge positions. Ms. Larson would be the best one to answer that question.
I'm not talking about discharge. I'm talking about the
Peterson
investigation. Doesn't that begin immediately?
Yes.
And you don't have any choice.
But, Mr.
Ms. Kelleher,
we'd often open an investigation, but if it is a criminal charge and their law enforcement is investigating, usually we let them investigate their case first and then take our case after they are completed. It's they're afraid we'll leak information or details, and they're collecting the case, and the school district often isn't the one to dog down people and find answers to it. So they can run concurrently, but oftentimes we'll open it and then let law enforcement do their job and tell us whether there are factual reasons. So when it's the charging, but Ms. Larson would be the one to answer.
Ms. Larson, will you be able to help us with this situation?
I know. I apologize. I was trying to help with another situation.
Oh, that's okay. Would you like us to restate the question? Representative Peterson?
Just to follow up with that.
Sure.
So if indeed you give time for the authorities, this is reported, is the teacher still in the classroom while this investigation goes on? And at that point, when is the point at which you would say we're going to withhold your pay and suspend you? Is it during the time that the authorities are investigating, the school board is investigating? What latitude do you have?
Ms. Kelleher, could you answer that, or would you like a help from Ms. Larson?
Well, I think Ms. Larson can follow up, but this bill would say when they're charged with a felony by law enforcement officials. That's not done by the school district.
Okay.
That would be done by law enforcement, and that's the trigger, that they actually charge someone with a felony. And then the school district may have the authority to withhold pay or not.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. I guess I'll refer to the amendment, or the actual bill, actually, line 2.5. If a teacher has been charged with a felony, is the language there that's pretty specific about being charged with a felony. Seems to me that would be the appropriate language we'd want to use.
Would be immediate then.
After they have been charged,
yes,
with a felony. Representative Kath, to this point.
Yeah, to this point. And this is to then Representative Loon. Is your intent to say any felony, or is it truly a felony that will lead to termination? Like, because there are other felonies out there. There may be a domestic situation that somebody gets involved with. You know, would that lead to termination in school? I'm not sure. And so I guess I'm wondering that, too. Is it any felony, or was your intent in this bill then any termination, you know, any felony that would lead to termination from their position at the school? So I'm just questioning that, like...
Representative Loon.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kath. Yeah, the language goes on to cite that if
is charged with a felony and the underlying conduct that is the subject of the felony charge is a ground for proposed immediate discharge. And those instances are already in the statute in 122A-40 subdivision 13, which is on the front page of the bill. And again, it's, you know, folks, I just want to also have everyone keep in mind that we're talking about a couple of different things. One is felony charges by law enforcement for some type of wrongdoing, alleged wrongdoing under our criminal codes. And you're also talking about standards for being a teacher working with children in schools. So there are different standards for that. Someone may not be guilty of the felony as charged, but again, the school district, you know, has you know, one of the things that are included in that immediate discharge are immoral conduct, insubordination, or conviction of a felony. So those are the things that are, you know, pertinent to this discussion.
Representative Greiling, you have the high honor of the last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And all I wanted was to say that when Representative Loon, when you're looking at making the two statutes for cities of the first class and other school districts uniform, I was suggesting your language for the cities of the first class rather than the other way around. I think you have the better language.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Representative Greiling, and I appreciate having your thoughts on that.
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify against House File 2651? Yes, sir. Please come forward, step up, and state your name for the record, who you represent, if anyone, and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Mark Swenson. I'm a teacher in East Grand Forks, and I represent myself. I think this overall bill has some merits as far as trying to make things so that the school board doesn't feel that they have paid somebody that shouldn't be paid. But we also need to protect the teachers from unfair accusations. So I think if you reverse what you're doing and say that the teacher will be paid until proven guilty, and if proven guilty, the teacher will reimburse the district, you would solve everything. Reverse what you're doing and hold it. You know, instead of saying the district will pay the teacher if they're innocent, that doesn't make sense. You know, as somebody that deals with kids that have middle school children have whims, and they can get together and be mean against each other. They can get together and be mean against a teacher. So let's protect the teacher at all costs. But if they are guilty, have a reimbursement.
Thank you, Mr. Swenson. Any questions for Mr. Swenson? If not, thank you very much for your testimony. Anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify against House File 2651? If not, closing comments, Representative Loon.
Do you want to say anything closing?
I would. Go ahead if you have.
I was just going to renew your motion.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I want to thank you again for this discussion. And again, reiterate, we're talking about first of all, people working with children and the standards involved there. And first of all, secondly, about bringing some parity to the latitude that school boards may have in these very difficult decisions. And right now we have a very disparate system with cities of the first class having some abilities of dealing with these situations in ways that other school districts do not have. And so I am trying, and hopefully it comes across in a thoughtful way, to address that and to also address some of the concerns that have been raised. I understand and take to heart some of the concerns that have been raised about, false charges or teachers being set up in that. But, again, we've been discussing this for well over a week. I have not turned up evidence. I hear anecdotal, but I haven't seen any actual cases brought forward. I'm not saying that they don't exist, but again, I think, you know, a quick Google search, and I already talked about the case that happened back in 1994, but a quick Google search that I did when I started working on this bill, just within the past 5 months, we have two school districts in Minnesota, mm-hmm. two teachers currently charged with criminal sexual conduct. I mean, this is public record. It's in the newspaper. I was able to reach the superintendent for one who said, yeah, you know, we have to pay them. We don't have a choice because they're not in a city of the first class. So this goes on, not a lot, but perhaps a lot more than any of us would like. And I think we need to
to have a resolution to this issue, that we're going to allow the boards to make some difficult but thoughtful decisions that I think, as Representative Keel pointed out very well, that indicate the big responsibility that they have, not only to the teachers, and again, protecting teachers' rights, which is very and very important, but also balancing the rights and the concerns of parents and who is teaching their children, and again, use of those taxpayer funds. For a lot of our districts that are struggling with their budgets and that, this again means that they're going to have to be putting an additional teacher on staff and paying that while they're paying someone who, again, has been charged with a felony, and in many cases, felonies involving students in that same school, and in many cases, it's sexual conduct issues. So I would urge the committee's support, and again, to Representative Kath and Representative Greiling, I will continue to look at the TRA issue as well.
Thank you, Representative Loon. Representative Erickson renews her motion to pass House File 2651 as amended and be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Against, nay. The ayes have it, and the bill is adopted. And
Mr. Chair, before we close off and recess, members, please put House File 2801 and 2329, as well as 2727, back in your folders so that our pages don't have to reorganize for tonight. The chair will call a recess, and we will resume at the call of the chair tonight. So, Mr. Chair, it's yours to take care.
Very good. The Education Reform Committee stands in recess at the call of the chair. After session tonight, we'll be in the basement hearing room. Thank you.
Our March 15th meeting will reconvene, please. At the request of Representative Holberg, House File 2329, the CPR bill, will be lying just resting tonight. So it indefinitely will rest.
Does it need CPR, Madam Chair?
It does need CPR, and Representative Holberg has headed up to here, and she would like it to just wait a while before she revives it, if she does.
I've had training. Are you
I also. So, members, we will call back to the table 2801, Representative Woodard's little bill that now I think has become a little well-conditioned bill. Representative Woodard, I'll renew my motion that 2801 after it's amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we did take the opportunity this afternoon to continue to massage the language. We do have language that at least makes, I think, all of us feel more comfortable. The department still has a little bit of angst over it, and they may testify, or they may not. Maybe if I put it in the words that they would agree with, maybe they won't, but it's up to them, of course. The issue, one of the issues is whether or not the language that we put in this bill would affect the waiver. And so it is not our intent, of course, that if this bill were to affect the waiver, the Department of Education came back and said, if you do this, you can't have your waiver. That is something we would not obviously move forward with. But there's two changes in the amendment.
Excuse me, Representative Woodard. Would you move your amendment, please?
And the I would like to move the A3 amendment for House File 2801.
Please explain your amendment, Representative Woodard.
So the amendment, Madam Chair, does one thing. On page 1, line 14, we delete 60 and insert 75. And the reason behind that is we wanted to make this a little bit of a tighter parameter. So 75% of kids would have to be eligible under this requirement for this to occur for charter schools. The second piece is the language about what exactly they're exempt from. And that is on line 1.4 of the A3 amendment. But on page 1, we delete line 16 and 17, and we insert exempt from the graduation rate measure that is one of the four multiple measures under Minnesota's federally approved 2012 No Child Left Behind Act waiver, but shall be included in a group with alternative learning centers and contract alternative schools for purposes of determining priority schools or other consequences under that federal waiver.
Thank you, Representative Woodard. Would you like to explain that now in simple English? No, I'm teasing, Representative Woodard.
I knew you were.
We understand the exemption, but it's very interesting how we have to just include so much detail for an exemption. But well done.
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I do move the A3 amendment.
Is there any discussion? Absolutely. Go right ahead. Yes. Please, Representative Woodard. Peterson S., please ask your question.
Okay. Your question is you'd like some more explanation.
She would like more explanation. Representative Woodard, please explain.
All right. Thank you, Representative Peterson.
And is it then the same for all? Does it fit them along with the rest of the programs?
Representative Woodard.
Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, it does. What it does is exempts them from the graduate rate measure. And what it does is we just wanted to be clear that what that meant, that it was one of the four measures under our 2012 No Child Left Behind waiver that we have with the Department of Education, and that it to tie it to those alternative learning centers.
So it is?
It is, yep. And she'll be included in a group with alternative learning centers and contract alternative schools. For purposes of determining priority schools. And so, if that works, Representative Peterson, I can get the department done. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Representative Peterson, follow up?
No. Thank you.
Good. Representative Woodard?
Do we need to vote on the A3 amendment?
Yes. Okay. But were you going to respond? Okay.
Sorry.
All those in favor of the A3 amendment, as has been explained by Representative Woodard because of Representative Peterson's good question, say aye, please.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and the A3 amendment is adopted. To your bill, Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know we've spent a little bit of time talking about this morning. I do have one additional testifier who promises to be very, very short. But wants to kind of give a little bit more of an overview of what we're trying to do here.
Welcome to the testifying table. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Yes, my name is Tony Simmons, and I'm the program director at High School for Recording Arts. And I will be brief. I just want to give a little bit more background to this issue as a charter school director, as well as talk about why I believe this issue should be resolved now as opposed to later. As you know, the dropout rate and the achievement gap is one of the most critical issues in public education. And to this state's great credit, it passed more than 20 years ago, as you know, 124D68, the graduation incentives program. Those risk factors are real. What it means to me as a charter school director, when I see young people come in with those risk factors, is that I recognize that my role and my staff's role in helping young people learn is confronted with such serious factors that the state decided that it needed to account for those risk factors and create a certain class of school for those young people to go to that it would take them off of the traditional assessment and measurements and recognize that a school isn't always equipped to overwhelm things such as pregnancy, being adjudicated, being expelled from school, and so forth. So it's really serious. So the real question today is, are charter schools who serve the same population going to be afforded the same sort of accommodation with respect to that? My school, clearly over 75% of our students come with those risk factors. That's what we wrote in our original charter. That's the population we want to serve. Those are the students that we receive. If we didn't want them to come, we would have no way under law to prevent them from coming. They show up, we serve them. That's our public responsibility. That's what the charter law says we have to do. But we do that welcomely. That's what we want to do. The issue is that when we're in a situation where we're being held to things such as a 4-year on-time graduation rate, where 60% of our kids or more have to graduate in 4 years, obviously that's impossible. So we have to figure out that there's something wrong right now in the law that needs to be corrected, because there's no reason why, with a problem as large as it is, the dropout rate and achievement gap, why we would not use all of our weapons, all of our public weapons, to deal with that problem. And the charter school sector is one of the pieces to that problem and ought to be used. Now, the reason why I believe this ought to be resolved now as opposed to later is because there's a real stigmatization when a school is identified as a priority school or persistently lowest achieving school or whatever, simply for not how well they're doing as a school, but for the students that they serve. I don't want to look at my students who come into the door and see them as one of these risk factors. I don't want to see that the fact that perhaps because they're pregnant and have a child, they may not be able to finish in 4 years or have the sustainability to allow our staff to affect their learning and their abilities to affect our assessment. I don't want to have that be a factor. I want to not be judged on just who we're serving, but how well we're doing. So if it comes to the case where this is not resolved now, and the State Department comes out with a list, and schools like ours is on the list as a priority school for reasons that relate to these factors as it relates to the students we serve, that puts a stigmatization on the school. More importantly, for my community, it really affects it. The families and the students who come to my school, they don't see a difference. Most of them have failed or dropped out of traditional schools. Many have even failed or dropped out of ALCs. They come to our school for us to help turn their lives around. We ought to be able to do that without being unfairly judged as a result of us taking on that great work. It is hard work to figure out alternative assessments. We're willing to, and we have been willing to work with the state for many years to figure that part out. But right now, if we don't have this correction in law and we're identified again, our families, our students, our community, our stakeholders are going to be adversely affected by that stigmatization. And we ought to be allowed to continue to do the good work we're doing while working with the department, while working with others to figure out alternative assessments, but at least fix this part of the problem right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Simmons. Representative Woodard?
Thank you. I think you had them at hello, so thank you for that testimony. I appreciate that.
And thank you, Mr. Simmons, for taking on a charter school like you are and coming to us with this issue so we can save your students, because that's very important to us. Are there others in the audience who would like to testify with concerns or in support of this provision? Representative Greiling, or Moran, you have a question. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Simmons, you might want to stay there. They might
Could
have questions for you.
For you. Yes.
Thank you.
If it's a tough one, it's for you.
Representative Woodard, is the department supporting this bill now?
And I will, it looks like the department's going to testify, and I'll let them speak for them.
Okay.
Or not. Well, if Mr. McHenry, let me try this. Mr. McHenry, you can come and testify, but the department stands
on
this.
Did I have a follow-up question?
That this is a better language. It fits the intent of what the department would like to work with these charter schools on, that it is not perfect language for the department, and that if the Department of Education, the Federal Department of Education, came back and said this would not meet our waiver requirements, then, of course, this is not a bill that would move.
Okay. That's pretty much okay.
Representative.
Thank you. I've heard it several Graham times follow-up? Today, so I think
yes,
I got it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, as we sit in this committee and looking at ways to provide opportunity for all our kids to be successful in eliminating barriers, I left here at a school that is providing a step of those kids who are sometimes not recognized or sometimes are not succeeding in a traditional matter. And we need alternatives, and it's needed. And so I left here saying, you know, I talked to you and saying, I think I need to sign on to this bill. I need to sign on this bill because right now, at this moment, we need to make sure that we are creating opportunities for every every young person to have to be successful in life, regardless of the barriers that they may be facing in life and in school. So I just want to thank you for taking on this bill. Thank you for your hard work, because nothing about what you do is easy. And the population you're serving, is nothing easier about that population, but we should never, ever give up on our kids and to create an opportunity for them. And so I will be supporting this bill.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Simmons, you weren't here this morning, but one of the concerns going from 65 to 75% was apparently the department's concern. But my concern from this morning, I don't think is still addressed, and Representative Woodard knows. I was sensitive to testimony from the lobbyist from St. Paul Public Schools, Mary Gilbert, and she's here now. I would like to hear from her because she mentioned, because I'm thinking of, you know, I support as far as you're going, and, you know, we know we've had this problem with the School of Recording Arts for a while, but I'm worried about other kids that are caught in the same net that are in other schools, and Mary Gilbert mentioned Humboldt, for instance. And so I'd like to hear from Ms. Gilbert as to how this, why this couldn't be worked out. I don't know if you were involved in it, or I was understanding that you were going to check into also including kids who were in other schools that would have need of this kind of flexibility.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I don't know, Mary or Ms. Gilbert may want to testify to where their stance is now. First of all, thank you, Representative Moran. I appreciate those words very much. And as far as the wording, one of the things that, from going to 60 to 75, was to attempt to address some of the concerns of St. Paul, that these are really schools that are, you know, dealing with ALC kids at a higher level. So I know that Humboldt, I'm not sure what the number is, but Humboldt may not now be one of those schools. The issue remains that we're not addressing what St. Paul School's issue is, which is they want us to take a look at how we do this with the traditional public schools. I don't think that it resolves that, unless I see it. Yeah, doesn't resolve that. But we don't have the ability at this point to fix that issue too. I see that as we talked this morning, Representative Greiling, as another push, as another effort. Mm-hmm. So at this point, what I want to do is have this bill move forward and have the conversation about addressing Ms. Gilbert's concerns for St. Paul in another bill or another discussion.
Representative Graham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Woodard, another bill next year, or are you still working on that this year? You know, I'm very sensitive to having different rules for charter schools compared to regular public schools, because I see them as the same in terms of both being public schools, and we should be fair to kids wherever they are. We should certainly do this bill. I'm not opposing this bill, but I'm very distressed that we're moving a flexibility ahead for some kids, but not for other kids. So when are you planning to work on that? And did you try to work on it today and fail, or you didn't even try?
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greiling. We've been trying. And I would hate to use the word failed, but that's probably an accurate description of trying to of our efforts to fix that. I am willing to do that this year if we still have time with deadlines and if we can get it through Rules Committee. There's a lot of ifs there. I mean, you understand that probably better than I do. And I know you'd probably like to get it addressed before you leave. So I understand that, too. But other than that, I appreciate your support of the bill, and I do think, you know, we can address the other issues. It is very difficult because it's complex when you look at when we tried to draft this bill as well. As Ms. Gilbert testified to, those ALC grad scores go back to the original school district. Well, we don't have a charter district for this to go back to either. So, I mean, there's going to be some differences in the approach between charter schools and traditional schools, as we know. But I think trying to address what Ms. Gilbert's issue is certainly feasible.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it looked like Mr. Simmons wanted to comment, and I'd like to hear what he has to say, and I'd also like to hear what Ms. Gilbert has to say.
Mr. Simmons.
Yes, I was just going to say that, you know, when we were looking at this issue, we saw it as an equity issue. issue ourselves, because for us, like the representative said, we don't have a place for our kids who meet this criteria to go to. Yet we saw that with the traditional public school districts, the ALC was a means to deal with that issue. So for us, we were saying, irrespective of where the test scores may go and how those things are shuffled around, in the end, it's about who are the students that we are serving. And if we're serving essentially the same students as the ALCs, we're simply saying we ought to be treated the same with respect to assessments and graduation rates. Otherwise, it would put a chilling effect on us serving that population. And we just think this work is too important for us to do anything to see those young people as a problem. So, you know, I don't know all of the inner workings that goes on that side, but, you know, we definitely believe that there should be equity.
Welcome to the testifying table. Ms. Gilbert, please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools, and this is not a new issue to us. I remember dealing with all the same folks when we originally had the designation of low-performing schools, and I think the issue for us and the issue that's come up kind of over the session is there's a lot of weight that is played about how proficient districts are, regardless of the makeup of their population, and in fact, sometimes, you know, or bringing kids back and getting them to graduation is not always given as much recognition as just outright standardized testing. And so the issue that we have is that we think that ALCs, you know, and if you want to be designated as an ALC for the purposes of accountability, then they should be treated the same across the board. And so our issue is that we just want to be held to the same accountability standards with the same populations of students. And we have a lot of at-risk students, too, and we have a lot of at-risk students in our ALCs as well. And so what we're hoping for is that if people want to do an apples-to-apples comparison, that they would treat groups of programs or schools or the same way for the purposes of accountability. That's all we're asking for.
Representative Greiley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I know that's what you're asking for, but what I wanted to know is, did you work with this group today and you were part of a group and you just agreed to postpone the discussion, or were you not included?
Ms. Gilbert.
Chair, I did have some discussions with the department, and they were having a hard time trying to figure out the attribution, and when asked about whether this group of schools should be excluded from the accountability measures, I said that I didn't think they should be excluded from the accountability measures, that they should, in fact, have to meet some of the standards, you know, that we have. I mean, the performing arts school, you know, has a great record. There may be some other schools that would meet the definition under the statute that might not perform as well. And so I think that the question here is, you know, maybe we want to, are we going to look at kids or schools, ALCs or charter schools that are serving, you know, large groups of students that have dropouts that are bringing them back, and then we should measure them against each other, because there's probably high performing ones and there's low performing ones. This fix doesn't address that either. It just says that for the purposes of the federal accountability measures, that they don't have to calculate the rate. And so, I mean, that's my issue. I think we need to have a measure applied across the board for programs serving this population of kids, regardless of whether it's a traditional public school, an ALC, or a charter school.
And I think, members, you know, that we would have to amend a different section of law to do this, so that we're dealing with the regular public as opposed to the charter school or the ALCs. So I think that would be one of the challenges. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and you're right. There are some challenges here, and I think one of the key points is that the St. Paul Traditional Public School District does have the ability to have ALCs, mm-hmm. and in a way, this is another avenue for St. Paul Traditional Schools to allow for kids under this category to go to a different school, to go to a charter school. So, of course, the High School for Recording Arts doesn't have that follow through, isn't able to do that to an ALC that is within their school district. So, I mean, there are some complications there that we just couldn't work out in a day, or a couple of days, really.
Representative Greiley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is my last. It's not that I don't support this bill, but so are you still working on this year, next year, or what's your timeline on that? Because
Representative Woodard, give us an answer.
It sounds well. Like there's plenty of work still, though, to be done, even with this one step, which I'm not thrilled about doing for without getting the others worked out, but I certainly don't want to delay it either for some students.
Well, Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Greiling. I'm hopeful that you may have some ideas in your years of experience on how we address that, and maybe even have some bills in the past that you've worked on. So I would enlist your support as well in trying to figure that out. And if we can do that jointly, I think we may have a shot at getting it through.
Great. Representative Peterson-Sandra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greiling has said a lot of what I was going to say, but we keep talking just about St. Paul. Minneapolis certainly has some schools that would fit the same criteria, and maybe even some of our suburban schools, I'm not sure. But some of those that have alternative learning centers, for sure, but then some of those who also have populations that meet the same criteria. And so I don't think it's just St. Paul. I think it is other places, and we ought to have a way for those schools also to have some exemptions.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How do I say this? Because you guys know I love you. I love you.
Hi. We love you too.
But it is the decisions we need to make, you know, to ensure that our kids are successful is never easy. And we can never put every factor into a bill. But we legislators, we can introduce bills. We can do that. We can work towards another end if that's what we need to do. And so I will hope that that is what we would do. Looking at equity, you know, I don't see how we can look at what the school do and pit them against a traditional school. It's like apple to oranges. It's just not the same. And many for ALLC schools, it's not, you know, there are many different challenges. And I think we need to say what are the barriers that are in place from keeping this school from being as effective as they need to be and get the support that they need to be successful with the population that they are serving. And I just wish we can include everything into one bill and make everyone happy. But sometimes that just isn't possible. But we can introduce another bill to complement this bill. So my hope is that we can move this bill and give the school what they need.
Representative Woodard.
And with that, Madam Chair, I would like that as my closing statement.
Representative Mariani, do you have a question for Representative Woodard or for Mr. Simmons?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just added myself to this bill, so I do support the bill. But I do get the logic, you know, if we're going to equate a charter to an ALC, then why not a regular public school to an ALC if they share the same student demographics? And maybe, Ms. Gilbert can come down really quickly.
Ms. Gilbert.
And Madam Chair, thank you. Humboldt High School was mentioned. Humboldt is in my backyard, and so I feel compelled to ask this question because I really don't know the answer. Is Humboldt High School, which is a regular public high school on the west side of St. Paul, do they match the student demographics that are spelled out in this language here?
Ms. Gilbert.
Madam Chair, the way, and Representative Mariani, the language says that they don't have to be in a graduate incentive program. They say they just simply have to be eligible for a graduate incentive program. And if you take a look at the criteria, it's pretty broad. I mean, it's non-English speaking, chemically dependent, pregnancy. I think it's maybe, I don't have it in front of me, but I think it might be not at grade level. You know, it's pretty broad criteria. And so if you take a look at, you know, a school that might be, you know, located in an urban center with a lot of refugees or whatever, I don't think it would be that difficult to qualify. I think the issue here is we've spent a lot of time as a committee talking about outcomes. And I think, so maybe the measure is that we should have a criteria, and I don't know, and I really look to the department, you know, to advise us on this, but I'm sure that ALCs and charter schools and high schools, even with a lot of at-risk kids, serving a very similar population may perform differently. And I think that what we want to look at, if we're serious about figuring out what works, you know, to get kids to graduation and to qualify, is to figure out a way that you can measure all those programs against each other. Because how would we know? And I'm sure there's some very good ALCs and there's not so good ALCs. There might be some great alternative charter schools and there may be some not so great. You know, we had a high school that was not performing well. We admit that. And so it's really not about the designation. It's about how do we look at the data and be fair when we're judging kids. And as I said earlier, kids start from a different starting point, and we need to understand that, and they have different struggles, and and trying to get them back in school and get them to be graduating is yeoman's work, you know, as we know. But some are better than others, and if we're going to use accountability to measure performance, and lots of folks do that in this committee, I think we need to do it fairly.
Well, Madam Chair,
Representative Mariani,
and I think it's a point. It's a fair point. It's a point well taken, and this speaks to, I think, you know, some of the realities that we do find in certain communities around the state, where you do have, in fact, a pretty large concentration of students that that face all the challenges under which the graduation incentive programs, you know, were created, who aren't necessarily in ALCs. You know, it's interesting because 2 years ago, former Representative Bly had a bill that we moved forward, and unfortunately weren't able to pass a major omnibus bill that year that got at some of this, you know, looking at establishing, recognizing, and I think establishing in state law, validating alternative ways in which you know, schools can get students to a high school diploma. Not lower standards, but just sort of alternative ways to get there. So this is a conversation that really is begging, you know, in this state, and I certainly echo your you know, desire to have the Department of Education wrestle with this issue about how do we get all sorts of different students to the same high standards, but perhaps getting there in different ways. But let me just, I mean, this is much more conversation than that, and I appreciate the chair's indulgence, but, you know, it seems to me that, you know, language on 1.16, which, you know, talks about purpose evaluating students and student academic performance, and I've heard federal, you know, measurements referred to here. And so this is kind of another little pet peeve, and Madam Chair, you and I probably share a little bit of this angst, you know, that we have so intertwined what we say in state statute are student and school academic performance measurements with metrics and expectations that come out of the federal government. And I think that's a legitimate discussion for us to have. And here's a perfect example, because I suspect, Ms. Gilbert, that if I understand this statute right, we probably couldn't do this. I think the federal government would say, you know what, St. Paul schools that make Humboldt an alternative learning center, don't apply, you know, a designation here relative to your own state's expectations, because their state expectations are our expectations, and we have rules about, you know, who gets a pass, if you will, and who doesn't. So I think there's sort of there's an intriguing web here that I think maybe makes it even more difficult for Representative Woodard to create something that might create an alternative recognition and acknowledgement of schools like Humboldt High School relative, or the same as what we're trying to do here with HSRA.
Ms. Gilbert.
Madam Chair and Representative Mariani, when the ESEA reauthorization was first put forward, they wanted to have the benchmark for all schools be based on the four-year graduation rate, and that was a concern of ours. Because, you know, this committee has gone to Harding High School last year, many of you, and, you know, that's a school with a lot of refugee students, with a lot of
language challenges, and in many ways, I wish Representative Bills was here because, you know, as a teacher, you know, from another district, I mean, he came back and talked about, you know, the work that that was going on there with these students, and so, you know, we were actually quite concerned that the measure would be an absolute four-year graduation rate, and that's and when there have been other bills before this committee advocating positions for reform, we've gotten pummeled because of our four-year graduation rate. And so I'm getting a little sensitive about not understanding that kids start in different spots and they come to us in different places and with different challenges, and that if we want to use data as the only measure of school success. And it's been interesting, too, that there's been other bills that have been introduced that want to look at different measures of graduation, and maybe we shouldn't have to have the grad test, and maybe we should look at, you know, different evaluations, you know, for staff. People are beginning to think that maybe the one size fits all or the one criteria fits all as far as a mark of success isn't maybe working for all schools, and I welcome that conversation. You know, as I said to Representative Woodard, we're dealing tonight with his bill, and I just, because I actually cynically, when I saw it, said, well, if you can get a pass on that, why wouldn't we just make every one of our high schools, you know, an ALC, and then we wouldn't have to have the four-year graduation rate, and then we could escape some of the, you know, the sanctions that would happen. And I don't think we should be gaming the system because we're worried about the data. I think we should be refocused on what's happening at the schools and which schools are working and which ones aren't, serving the same difficult population. And unless we compare apples to apples, we're not going to know which ones those are.
Mr. Simmons.
Yeah. I want to state that for many years we've been supportive of alternative assessment. Accountability is not something we're afraid of. We believe in continuous school improvement. We definitely believe that there are people who serve this population who are doing good work with it and some who need more work. For us, it's that as a charter school, we feel that we're in a unique situation where we're an independent school district and we have limited options. In terms of us being identified, it's only us. A big district, and I agree with a lot of what I heard colleagues say in terms of, you know, looking at it in a broader sense. But for today, for a school like ours that is looking down the road and is considering being identified as a school that needs that kind of designation about, you know, being a priority school with persistently low achievement, that has a very serious consequence to us. And we believe that addressing that issue now is just really important while we continue to work on multiple assessments. And we would love to partner with St. Paul. We would love to partner with the whole public school sector on thinking about multiple means of assessment. But we believe that this issue right now with respect to charter schools, which has real consequence, ought to be addressed.
Thank you, Mr. Simmons. And I think the department has been listening carefully to these concerns. Representative Woodard, are you ready to resume?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Discussing with Ms. Larson that she may have a solution that we could look at in the future. I don't know if Ms. Larson was, I know you don't propose, but if you were indicating that might be something we do tonight, I guess I'm a little nervous about making that big change tonight without having it fully vetted. And I understand, I think it is a very good idea, but I'd like to get a few more stakeholders to be able to discuss that, because it's a significant change from what we're discussing today or tonight. So I think, to Representative Greiling's question earlier, this may be the idea that kind of gets us where we all want to be, but I don't think we can do that tonight.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, And I appreciate that. I move bills, and I know that, you know, doing things in a fly is always, you know, tempting, but, you know, you also want to be careful with unintended consequences and think it through carefully. But I suspect the bill from here will be moving to finance or to the floor. Oh, so we would have to do it on the floor. Okay. I was trying to figure out where we could do that. Doing things on the floor is always tricky.
Yeah. Representative Woodard, I don't think there's a reason for this to go to finance.
Well, there's no, Madam Chair, there's no financial implications to it.
Well,
Representative Mariano.
Madam Chair, Representative Woodard, you know, as Representative Gralling, you know, as a veteran, will probably, you know, also share, you know, we could set it to finance, you know, specifically for the purpose of making sure that you have some time to get some policy language. I understand it's, this is the policy committee here, but, you know, time is what it is, and I don't think there's any mischief here in terms of anyone wanting to do any damage in the finance committee, and so that might be a possible play. It's just another step before we get to the floor. And perhaps, you know, if the chair is, you know, willing, we can even just hear what the idea is here, so at least the policy committee has heard it, and then gives perhaps the author some time to think about it a little bit more, make sure it's tight, and then move it effectively in finance, and then add to the floor. And I would certainly help you in doing that.
Representative Woodard, would you like Ms. Larson to share with us what she came up with?
Madam Chair, I think that's it's a good idea for us to do that and at least have a first initial vetting of that. And as far as the rules here, I'm just, you know, concerned that we're meeting deadline, and I assume Representative Mariano and Representative Gralling, I mean, we're all kind of kumbaya this evening on this, is that, you know, if we are sending it to finance, and I know that's the chair's call here, I have no problem with continuing to massage that along the way. I just want to make sure that, you know, as we've testified to, that we don't kill the bill as a result of that maneuver.
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, what this is essentially a delete everything amendment, because rather than amend a subdivision in the charter school law, what this would propose to do is insert a subdivision in a section in Chapter 120B35 having to do with accountability. Specifically, 120B35 contains Minnesota's student achievement and growth language. It pertains both to federal as well as state accountability measures. Subdivision 1 has to do with indicators of growth and achievement. Subdivision 2 with federal expectations for student achievement. Subdivision 3 with the state growth target and other state measures. Subdivision 4 is about improving schools. And what might work is, after Subdivision 4, inserting a new Subdivision 4A with the headnote that would read, graduation measures, semicolon, schools serving graduation incentive program students. Graduation measures, semicolon, schools serving graduation incentive program students. So that's the headnote. And then the subdivision is two sentences. It would read as follows. Notwithstanding other law to the contrary, any public school, including a charter school, serving 75% or more of enrolled students eligible to participate in the graduation incentives program under Section 124D.68 is exempt from the graduation rate measure that is one of the four multiple measures under Minnesota's federally approved 2012 No Child Left Behind waiver, period. The department shall include all schools under this subdivision in a group for purposes of evaluating student and school academic performance outcomes using the remaining three multiple measures under that federal waiver, period.
Department, would you like to come down?
They may not like to, but they probably will.
Oh. Welcome, Mr. McHenry. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, members, Kevin McHenry from the Department of Education. Appreciate the effort and the discussion that you all are having right now. We've had this for a long time, and we did have quite the discussion today. I think Representative Woodard did raise an issue. We did have some concerns of how this would affect the accountability provisions. I don't know if this, the work that Ms. Larson has done here, completely alleviates that. I think one of the issues is, as we've been working on this, is we definitely are sympathetic, and we understand, we appreciate the great work that is being done here. But I think from our perspective is asking to have schools treated differently under the accountability system that we are under, not just our waiver, but the whole NCLB federal requirements, is that trying to find a solution through this on a state level, we may keep running into what our requirements are coming down from the federal level. And I think that's what we've been kind of banging our heads against the wall. Trying to figure this out. Now, the issue on this, you know, again, I appreciate the work that Ms. Larson has put into here. This is something that we can talk with our federal accountability team, mm-hmm. And that team is Sam Kramer, that you all are familiar with, and share this and see what if we can get some feedback from the federal government as far as how this would implicate, not just with the waiver, but as far as all of it. CLB.
Thank you, Mr. McHenry. I appreciate the dilemma that you face because you do have to check this. I realize that. Do you have a sense of whether or not you would know in the next week the answers to the questions you've posed now, so that if I did send this to finance, although I hate to load that onto Representative Garofalo, but many of us do serve there, and we've all heard it now, if we would know an answer?
And Madam Chair, members, appreciate the question. I think this is something that we are interested in still trying to find a way that we can solve. And, you know, at this moment, it is kind of frustrating. You know, we don't feel that we do have a solution to it, but it doesn't mean that we're not committed to trying to find a solution. I think the early indications are that I've heard is that it probably could be a problem from the federal government. That being said, we don't have that absolutely confirmed, but it's something that we'll definitely continue to push.
Well, and in response to that, Mr. McHenry, even what we're adopting here tonight is still in question, correct? Yes.
Madam Chair, members, unfortunately, yes.
Yes. Thank you for your input. Members, any preference that you might have? Representative Greiley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm definitely not trying to kill the bill. It hasn't come through, it hasn't met the deadline in the Senate either. Okay. Well, I guess I would recommend passing it. My preference would be passing it with Ms. Larson's amendment, and then whether it goes to finance or not, I guess doesn't matter to me as much as if it passes out of here with the broader application and then that gets vetted later.
Representative Mariani, you're the lead in policy. What would be your wish?
Madam Chair, my wish would be that we had more time, but we don't have more time. You know, we were just talking, you know, I don't want to do harm to this. To this effort on the part of this unique school. And so Representative Woodard and I were kind of going back and forth about, you know, what to do. And I think that it is, I think it is possible, what I'm hearing, that even the graduation element may not be enough to take care of the concerns of the school. And so I think, you know, I certainly don't want to do damage to, you know, the honest attempt of this school to have its bill presented forward. And so I'm a little at a loss to do just because we don't have time, but I don't think we should do damage to this bill at this point. if we don't feel comfortable that all the T's are crossed and I's are dotted relative to the possible amendment here.
So, Representative Woodard, I think we should move your mm-hmm. bill to the General Register, and because I feel a confidence in this room tonight, if the department is able to resolve something, that we could add it as an amendment on the floor without a lot of turmoil, I believe, or do it in conference committee with the Senate, provided they move this provision. Do you know where this is right now?
I believe they're getting a hearing on this in the Senate, Madam Chair, this week or...
Well, it hasn't been heard yet.
No, this week is Thursday, so it'd have to be next week.
Representative Norton?
Just a procedural question, Madam Chair. I guess I hate to bother Representative Garofalo, too, but I don't really like doing amendments on the floor. So my question procedurally is, if we move it to the General Register and an agreement could be made, could it be pulled back here for fixing and then sent to the General Register again? Because once we've met deadline, it kind of takes the pressure off, and we do have a number of weeks yet in the session. So I wondered if that would be a possibility as well.
That would absolutely be a possibility. I'd like the author to respond, however.
Yeah. I think, Madam Chair, that's very good advice, Representative Norton. I think that's probably the best route to take, is if we could pass it as the A3 amendment,
yes,
as amended, and then you know, if we are able to work out that language, we just have mm-hmm. it pulled back and fix that piece of it. Because I know there's some concerns on the part of the high school as well on what we're trying to do here, and I think we can work those things out, but I think there's concerns amongst all stakeholders that I'm not comfortable in making the delete all amendment today. So I think it's a brilliant idea.
So with that said, Representative Woodard, I'll renew your motion that 2801 as amended be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and your bill is on its way. Thank you very much.
Thank you, members.
And Mr. Simmons, thank you. And for those who came tonight and stayed with us, thank you very much. Yeah. Representative Mariani, the big bill of the evening, the agency bill. And thank you, those from MDE who have been sitting through all of these meetings this morning and tonight to help us out. Representative Mariani, would you like to move your bill, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would.
Representative Mariani moves 2727, and you have an amendment, the A1. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, it's correct. I would move the A1 amendment.
Representative Mariani moves the A1 amendment. I think because you're going to walk through this bill with the department, is there any impending discussion on the A1, members? If not, let's move to approve it so Representative Mariani and all those who are here from the department can walk us through this. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and the A1 amendment now is adopted. And Representative Mariani, 2727 is in the order in which you'd like to explain it. Please begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I should have said quickly that one of the things the A1 amendment does, because I know several members have heard some, have been lobbied and have spoken with some folks who were concerned with some of the language in the bill related to homeschool issues. And so the A1 amendment takes care of those issues. I'm going to be very brief and just let the department walk through this. This is a department policy bill. It has conforming language to several areas of law that was actually legislated last year, including the homeschool language, some transportation issues. There's new language here with the commissioner selecting districts to participate in standalone field testing. That's kind of been a perennial issue that's been around for many years. There's a vitally just issue relative to the grad math alternative of 2009 and extending that to a group of students who fall under the BST coverage, and of course the BST test is, you know, that's passed, and so the department will explain the kind of the limbo these students are caught up in at this point. There's some language, several languages here related to charter schools, relating to, oh gosh, I'm losing my notes here, Madam Chair. But transparency issues with charter schools, reporting, some technical changes. And then there's an issue toward the end of the bill relating to the uniform billing system for tuition billing for students who are placed in care and treatment programs. And so that's very quick, but I'll ask the department to walk through it.
And Representative Mariani, this will be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance because of some of the things in the general education article. Mr. McHenry, are you going to begin?
Madam Chair, members, I'll let Mr. Cordy begin.
Please say your name for the record and begin, please.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Darren Cordy. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Education. Rather than go through this bill section by section, I think in the interest of time, it makes more sense to just go through by what we're trying to do in the sections that are affected by it. So starting in Article 1, Sections 1 and 12 through 13, these provisions clarify education, residency, and transportation for students experiencing homelessness. This aligns district responsibility and revenue streams with current reporting practices and allows early childhood special education students to be included as homeless. As Representative Mariani stated, we did get some feedback after this bill was released, and one of the changes in the A2 amendment was to clarify some of this language, and it was a change requested by the St. Paul Public School District. Sections 2 through 5 and Section 11 are cleanup on last year's homeschool mandate reduction bill. This ensures that unaccredited non-public schools have the same reporting requirements as homeschools. As Representative Mariani mentioned, we did get some feedback from the homeschool community on this. We've spoken with the non-public council as well as Mr. Tuma, who as a homeschool advocate, and we believe that the language that the changes that were made in the A1 amendment were address the concerns that they had. Moving on to sections 6 through 10 and 14 through 16, this moves the alternative teacher compensation program from a general education revenue item to a separate categorical. And Section 17 of Article 1 replaces all usage of limited English proficient, or LEP, and English language learner, or ELL, in Minnesota statutes and rules with English learner, or EL, to be consistent with the U.S. Department of Education blueprint for ESEA reauthorization. Moving on to Article 2, Section 1, does two things. First, it requires the commissioner... requires commissioner-selected districts to participate in standalone field testing and implements an appeals process to the commissioner. And secondly, this section extends the grad math alternative pathway that was passed in 2009 to students that were in eighth grade before 2005-2006. There's a number of adult basic education students, around 200-250 students that were required to pass the basic skills test, did not pass it for one reason or another, and now do not have access to the math grad pathway. So basically they would be expected to pass the math grad outright in order to receive their diplomas. This would just allow them the same pathway that existing students currently have. Section 2 allows the Department of Education to pay post-secondary institution mileage reimbursements for PSEO and alternative students, and it allows students to seek reimbursement directly from the post-secondary institution. Currently, students seek reimbursement from the district. The district then has to verify enrollment, and before they're then reimbursed by the post-secondary, and the student is reimbursed by the district. This just takes the district out of the equation and makes it easier for the post-secondary to validate the enrollment, makes it easier for the student to get their reimbursement from the post-secondary institution. Sections 3 through 5 require authorizers of charter schools to use student achievement as the number one factor in granting, renewing, or revoking a charter. This would require department oversight to ensure that authorizers are using academic achievement as the most important factor when chartering a school. This change is necessary to continue to qualify for the federal CSP grants, of which we just received a rather large one last week. Moving on to Section 4 of Article 2, this would require charter schools to make school board meeting minutes and board member contacts info readily available to the public via the school's website. This just aligns charter schools with the same requirements that independent school districts have. Section 6 makes a technical fix, changing days to hours to reflect minimum hours for student instruction required under 120A41. Section 7 and 8 of Article 2 removes the requirement that charter schools submit changes to their insurance policies to MDE. We view it as a role of the authorizer to verify that coverage, and that type of coverage is already included in the charter contract, which is submitted to MDE. Section 9 makes typographical changes to the organizations listed under the Career and Tech Organization Statute. This is consistent with legislative intent. We've received permission from the chairs to act on this in the past. And moving on to Article 3, Section 1 and 125A.16 under Section 4 repeals the statute relating to temporary placement in a state institution. This is being repealed because all state institutions are now closed. Section 2 and Section 4, the repealer of 125A80, these sections require that non-resident districts use the MDE tuition billing system when they're billing non-resident tuition of students in care and treatment programs who do not have an IEP. Currently, that billing needs to be done through the tuition billing system for students with IEP, so this just ensures consistency in the billing process for all students regardless of their IEP status. This also removes the requirement that copies of these billing forms be submitted to the commissioner, because now we'll be receiving them through, they'll be on file through the tuition system, and it repeals 125A80 then as duplicative. And finally, Section 3 clarifies that a district only needs to seek commissioner approval for on-site, that is physically on the grounds of the facilities, education programs for children in residential facilities licensed by DHS or DOC. And Madam Chair, that concludes the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I misspoke earlier on the A1 amendment. There actually is a small provision, if it's okay with the chair, to do a
is this the homeschool
small amendment? Yes.
Please, Representative Mariani, go ahead and
members. This language was shared with the committee earlier prior to this, so there's no surprises here. So this would be on page 4 of the bill itself, and it would be on line 10. And so on line 10, we would strike homeschooled under this section 120A.22 subdivision 6, and then we would insert non-public school that is not accredited, non-public school that is not accredited by a state recognized accrediting agency. Non-public school is not accredited by a state recognized accrediting agency. And Madam Chair, I was actually surprised. I turned and said, well, what's that? But apparently there are these entities, and I'm wondering if maybe
would you like Mr. Tuma to
tell us who they,
address
who they are?
It?
Madam Chair,
okay, Mr. Court.
Madam Chair, there's a number of non-public institutions that aren't considered charter schools under current law, and this just ensures that those non-public, non-accredited schools are required to undergo the same reporting requirements that homeschools have under statute.
Thank you, Mr. Corti. Other members, do you have any questions about this? Representative Mariani will vote on that since it's so. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 words. So members, page 4, line 10,
Representative Mariani struck homeschool under Section 128.22, Subdivision 6, and inserted non-public school that is not accredited by a state-recognized accrediting agency. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and this amendment is adopted. Thank you, Representative Mariani. Are there others in the audience who need to testify to the agency bill? Questions, members? I have a question on the transportation for the homeless. And Mr. McHenry, you know that I told you I was going to call my bus company. I'm wondering, is there any limitation on miles? Because what's happening is that a van from Princeton is traveling every day to Blaine to pick up three children and bring them to the Princeton public school system, and then they return them. So they're making two round trips every day. And their resident district is Princeton, but this family presently is living in a hotel in Blaine, or the Blaine area. They were living with the family, but it's a huge expense. And so I don't know, maybe this we should talk about this offline, but I don't know if other districts are experiencing this when we have homeless. Mr. McHenry?
Yes.
And you don't have to answer. We can talk about this privately. So, but I did want to call your attention to this, what I consider, you know, quite a long trip. These children have to be picked up very early in the morning, which means the driver leaves even earlier because it is just about an hour trip to Blaine and then hour back and then the repeat in the afternoon. Mr. Carty.
Madam Chair, members, unfortunately, Carol Hulkinson, who is our kind of expert on homelessness, and McKinney Vento, was unable to make it back tonight. But from what I just discussed with Dr. Melcher, she doesn't understand that there is a limit on mileage. You know, that's something that is covered under the federal McKinney Vento Homeless Act, and that's not really what this bill addresses.
Okay. Thank you very much for clarifying that. Are there other questions? Representative Depke.
Are there other schools that would be included in this definition of non-public school that's accredited besides homeschools?
Mr. Carty.
Madam Chair, members, and perhaps Mr. Tuma could help me, but it was my understanding that that a homeschool is when you're being taught by a parent, and then mm-hmm. A non-public, not accredited, where you're not being taught by a parent, but I would defer mm-hmm. to Mr. Tuma.
Mr. Tuma, yeah, please say your name for the record and
Madam Chair,
begin.
Representative Depke, my name is John Tuma. I'm with the Minnesota Association of Christian Home Educators. I had the wrong hat on there for a second. When we did the homeschool mandate reduction bill last year, we discovered something I guess we hadn't really thought about in the past, but there are a lot of, I should say a lot, there was about 50 little schools that were less than about 20 mm-hmm. students. Typically, they're a little church school, like a Mennonite church school or a Latter-day Saints church school, and they are doing it in their, you know, church basement with, you know, 10, 15 kids. And they're really regulated the exact same way that homeschoolers are. They fill out the same form. They have to do the same reporting to the Department of Education, but it's not the parent that's doing it. So the way that the change in the drafting are now, we're kind of treated on par with that little Mennonite school, and that's the same regulation. They got to follow the same rules that we did. And so we changed a few things. We didn't take that into account when we kind of used some of the old terminology of homeschooling. And so when that student now goes into the public school, they'll have to do the same thing that we do, provide test scores and the record keeping that we all kept, they all kept under the law. They had to keep it before, but we just want to clarify when they enter public school to get their diploma, they got to do the same thing we do.
Representative Depp.
Thank you. I do have one more for Mr. Tuma, too, because I know he's very familiar with homeschooling. So, in your opinion, is it all right if I ask Mr. Tuma this question? Okay. Would this new definition create implications for the regulation or certification of homeschools?
Mr. Tuma, your opinion.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative, no, it doesn't. We're under the same statute, it's treated the same way, no different. It just takes the word homeschool out of there because it reduces the confusion between us and that little Mennonite school that's out there. So it's not any confusion. It doesn't change anything yet for our regulations. And actually, we support the change. I think it's a very good change. And so we appreciated the accommodation the Department of Ed gave our folks on the non-public ed council and their willingness to work with us. So they should be commended for their effort.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Myra, did you have a question?
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani took care of it with his oral amendment.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there other questions from members? If not, Representative Mariani, I'll renew your motion that 2727 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on K-12 Education. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the bill is on its way to K-12. Education,
thank you,
finance. Thank you very much, Department and Representative Mariani. Members, we'll meet on Tuesday, and you'll see the schedule posted very shortly. Meeting adjourned, by the way.